It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Alex, and Renee are here. We've got a wonderful panel to talk about WWDC. What will Apple announce? The new iOS, the new OS X, and maybe even an iWatch. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 352, recorded May 28th, 2013. Black and white and flat all over. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MACBREAK5. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, or other smartphone is worth at gazelle.com. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients anywhere. You could share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code MACBREAK. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that talks about all your Macintosh and Apple needs, and with us, three of the biggest, best Apple journalists in the world, starting with Andy Iannocco of the Chicago Sun-Times.
Hey, ho, Skipper.
It's good to see you.
Good
I
to
see you. Have a Memorial Day memorial left on your screen.
Yes, this was in the Boston Common yesterday. They had like the Soldiers and Sailors Monument. It's like it's on the top of a hill, so they had the entire hill covered with flags. I think the new number was actually significant to the number of New Englanders or someone lost.
Wow.
And so you have two thoughts. Number one, and yeah, when you do, like, you're not, it's not like this was announced. I was across the street in the public garden and I saw, oh, that hill that I've seen all the time that's usually green is now white and red and blue.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And then to see the enormity of, well, here are X thousand objects identical to this number we keep throwing about. That's how many those are.
And that brings it home. Yep.
I came here for an interesting picture, but now I'm appropriately a little bit melancholy.
Probably not good to have the squirrel on top of it because some might confuse it not knowing it was Memorial Day, you know, when they watch it in 6 months and think that's how many squirrels were on your lawn or something.
Very patriotic squirrel.
Yes. Also with us from Australia, where it is early in the morning, Mr. Alex Lindsay, just
good
coming
day,
up
mate.
On 4:30. Good day.
Yeah, it's a little early this morning, but I usually get up pretty early anyway. So
tell me you're there for fun, not work.
Work. I don't really travel for fun. what I do for fun is I do barbecue.
Fun is staying home. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're here. There's CBIT here, and Salesforce was doing some work here.
Oh,
so,
fun.
So I was here helping with that.
Oh, fun. That's awesome. Also from Montreal, joining us right now, Mr. Rene Ritchie of iMore.com. Hi, Rene.
Hi, Leo. How's it going?
Good. I'm hoping you can gin up some rumors for us because it's kind of a slow week in the Mac world.
We have F1 coming up next week, so I'm going to say Apple's going to release a race car.
Nice. This is the lull before the storm. Of course, WWDC now 2 weeks away, and I think that it's pretty likely that everybody's just waiting now. Although often this is when you get the most fervent rumor mongering. Is there
Apple
a drumbeat going on?
Will take the stage. The first time this year, Leo.
What, that Apple's taking the stage?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I mean, it's been 6 months, 7 months.
Well, usually it's like next week is the most interesting thing because if there's actual hardware that they're going to be showing off, that's usually the window during which it's now not really possible for them to lock down every single person who has to hold and touch this object before the show begins. So that's the time when if you see a picture, you're at least, you don't necessarily believe it, but at least you're in that time frame where you're thinking, okay, this is not the most ridiculous thing in the world to think that this is a picture of a Retina iPad Mini, which it's still not the right time for an Retina iPad Mini, but at least you're saying this is purports to be that thing. You're at least willing to, okay, let me look at this critically as opposed to simply nodding and smiling and then saying, "Can I have another
Retina Mac
coffee,
Mini,
please?
Andy?" You've nailed it.
Well, exactly. I think it's interesting that Apple's
now... The silkscreening on that logo is just... you just can't go back to the old silkscreen logo.
I love it. Retina Mac.
Well, and I think that it's interesting that WWDC has really become the big event, I mean, for Apple. So I think it's interesting that it's a developers conference that is really what's getting... highlighted. Not only highlights, of course, what Apple's releasing, but also their developers and how successful their developers are and how popular WWDC is. But I think, unless I'm mistaken, this is really the biggest event of the year for now that, you know, Apple doesn't go to Macworld and doesn't go to anything else. This is the one time where it's the only scheduled one.
The calendar.
Yeah.
I would say that the September rollout is as significant only because everybody's expecting. Here's something consumery that they're going to have to show off at this point if they keep the streak going, because they're going to be releasing stuff for the holidays. Whereas we've been seeing cool things at WWDC to show here's what the new operating system is going to be like for both iOS and macOS. And sometimes that's going to be a good thing, and sometimes that's going to be another one of those nod, take the free tote bag, walk out, and blog about it moments.
So what do we know? What don't we know? What do we know about what we don't know? The only thing we know that we don't know about what we know is that we know that it'll be 10 a.m. Pacific time on June 10th, which is a Monday, which is exactly the same time Microsoft is having their next Xbox press conference at E3. I'm trying to think, Chad, and I think what we're going to do is we're going to cover both, and we'll do left channel, right channel.
Audio in the left channel will be from the Microsoft.
Exactly.
And the audio in the right channel will be from WWDC.
Exactly. And that way you won't... We'll do a little picture-in-picture maybe of the Microsoft. Because I think people are going to really want to know what Apple has to say. We already kind of know a little bit about the Xbox.
It just makes lots of sense.
Why not?
Is this going to be like Dark Side of the Moon syncing up to Wizard of Oz?
It's going to be amazing. Because I'm going to have Tim Cook...
The audio from one, the visuals from the other.
Exactly.
Just do that for 5 minutes and see how well it syncs up.
It'll be amazing. We'll have Tim Cook and whoever, Steve Ballmer, going, and now we'd like to show you the new Xbox One, MacBook Pro. And it'll be just fabulous. It'll
be the first Xbox Nano.
The Xbox Nano. It'll all mesh together. We will be doing live coverage. I think we'll probably do live coverage at WWDC with an eye out on the Microsoft thing. Maybe we'll have Jeff Gerstmann in a soundproof box going hushed voices. And now they're revealing. 10 a.m. Pacific means we'll do it right after. We'll do an early TNT and we'll do that. And I will be here and Tom will be here. But Andy's going to be at the event, right?
Yeah.
I and Renee are.
And Renee's going to be at the event. So what we're going to do is MacBreak Weekly will be at its usual time the next day on Tuesday, but you guys will be live in studio with us.
That'll be awesome.
Yeah.
Andy said our first Meet Space episode.
It'll be the first Meet episode. Yes, indeed. I guess, we know the only thing I think everybody agrees that we're sure about is iOS 7. Will be talked about, yes.
And I think that one of the other things that's probably pretty prevalent as far as people expecting is a new, in iOS 7, the Jony Ive version of the of our new icons and everything else. I think a lot of people are expecting to see what he plans to do.
Have there been any leaks at all of what that might be?
People talking about it, but no one's got any screenshots of it that I know of.
They're saying now more monochrome, it sounds like. More monochrome.
I've heard from two people now that it's kind of silver and black. Mark Gurman from 9 to 5 Mac heard white and black. That could just be a difference in how people describe what they saw.
Go ahead, Renee.
No, I was just going to say it does sound like he is taking it. You know, iTunes went very colorless, and it does sound like they're pulling a lot of the color out of the palette, and then they're going to use color selectively to sort of... highlight differences in the apps.
I haven't been hearing. I've been hearing a lot about consistency from app to app to app. And one person sort of described, and this is not a really great source, but was describing to me as making sure there wasn't quite so many jarring differences from one experience to the other throughout the built-in apps, and which I thought to be kind of interesting because I like. I would be disappointed if the iPhone experience became every single app looks so similar to each other that there aren't a whole lot of visual cues that this list view you're in right now is the Notes app list view versus this list view I'm in right now is the Mail app view. Because especially when I'm dealing with a tiny handheld device, you know, like a phone, I need some sort of a cue to remind myself, like when I first wake it up, that this is the space that I'm in right now. And if it was too consistent, I'm not sure if it would be more difficult to use, but it would be something that I'd have to get used to.
Is Maps a model for what we might see? Maps is the most recent Apple app, and is podcast. Certainly flatter. Podcasts, too, right?
Yeah, I think we're looking for flatter than the Maps app. And to Andy's point, I know in previous management at Apple, knowing what app you're in the minute you hit it was more of an importance. Like if you were in the contacts view in Game Center, yep. you would never mistake that for the contacts view in Phone or the contacts view in Find My Friends. So if they are sort of, you know, snow leoparding the thing and making it more consistent, I'd also worry about that usability level.
I don't know. You know, I'm thinking about Windows Phone where there is Microsoft has enforced a very standard consistent UI. And I think it works pretty well. It makes it the phone feel more unified.
It's a little monotonous and a little like the information density is very low. It's a little monotonous, and I have gotten lost once or twice.
Have you? Okay. Now, of course, this is only Apple's own apps. Third-party apps are going to go where they go.
Well, in some ways, if Apple goes very flat and third-party apps don't, in some ways, their applications may pop out a little bit more. You know, within the interface as well.
Remember, folks, this is all about style, right? Design styles change. Fins came in, fins went. Chrome went in, came in, Chrome went. And some of it was informed by perhaps even prompted by changes in technology. You know, cars look different today because we can use computer design and different materials to make them more curvy, for instance. But I think a lot of it is just design style. And the style was skeuomorphism and aqua and lickable, the Steve Jobs lickable interface, which is very colorful, right?
Rich textures.
And then what happens is, you know, in order to keep things fresh, and a cynic might say in order to keep people buying, because you don't want to have the old design, and since we can't really change technology as fast as we might like to, especially now when mobile is pretty mature, especially on the Apple side, maybe it's time to, you know, use the design to drive people to new product.
But I feel like that Johnny Ive has been sitting there working on the hardware for a long time, and I don't know if it's a general flow of Apple more than Johnny Ive just wanting to get his two cents in. I mean, you know, I think that the the rumors are that whole look has kind of driven him crazy for a long time, and now that he has the ability to move it, he's going to.
Well, there is the problem of having too much, you know, wickety-whack on the interface, stuff that really doesn't do anything except for make it look pretty. And the problem is that functional is something that you can really prove in a lab. Looks pretty is something that's going to be very, very subjective. But I think that one of the big drivers for this is not just the need for change, which is important enough, but also the fact that more and more of Apple's devices are really, really high intensity, high resolution displays. Now that's moving farther across the desktop OS situation as we go. And the thing is that when you have a tooled leather background now and it's on a 300 dpi 400 dpi you know retina level display, that's a lot more that's a lot more distracting than it would be like at a lower resolution. Higher resolution is something that makes fonts stand out a lot better. You really do notice how much crisper letters are, and not only do you have a problem of adding more detail to background stuff, like again that brushed metal, that tooled leather sort of look, but also now you're increasing the load of how big an app has to be. If you're going to have all of these super high density retina graphics, and now your entire interface is based on having these super high density elements, now you're basically taking an app that used to be kind of compact and could be downloaded easily over a cell network and making it huge and not really adding any functionality to it. So I do think that the prime mover is really. We've had this interface for a long time. We need to freshen up a little. But I think there's also it's also been moved a little bit by the increase in the quality of the displays across the Apple line.
I think Andy's right. I mean, Windows Phone and Android famously went flat because they wouldn't have to composite, they wouldn't have to mask, they wouldn't have to do a lot of the heavy graphics lifting, and it increased performance. And with iOS, they were fine because they have a really good OpenGL layer and they have really good at compositing. But by getting rid of a lot of that stuff, they become even faster. And I know some designers I've spoken with who are big fans of the rich sort of textures, they're still anticipating a lot of work because they think where Apple goes, so will the market. And a lot of people will be coming to them to get their apps redesigned to look more, you know, quote unquote, modern, like whatever iOS 7 is going to look like.
I still think it's mostly the other way, style.
Though. See, I think if everyone goes flat, I think I would make mine really look really 3D, so that it would like if you look look at your iPhone and you see like one app like sticking out like a little mountain.
In 2 years or three, it'll be something else. I think this is just what happens. Yeah. This is design. Design is very style driven. It's just like fashion. It's trendy.
Alex, this is something that I suddenly want to ask you with your experience. Are we getting close to the point where you're not hiring a graphic designer to design a user interface? Now you're pretty much wanting to go into TV and video and film to hire a set designer, someone who really understands how light interacts with surfaces and how to draw attention to one thing over the other. Because the lighting effects that we're seeing, even in a simple to-do list app, is something that you would like to see in an American International picture from 1964. It like kicks butt from cheap movies from the 60s and 70s.
The guys that work on a lot of those icons are, you know, they're doing heavy 3D to do those. I mean, those are designers that could get a lot of work somewhere else. They're not building them the way they used to. You know, most of those are 3D rendered in a variety of applications. And so that you really are in a, you know, for the skeuomorphic. So if skeuomorphic goes away, then that becomes, you know, that changes a little bit. But I think that you definitely are thinking, you have to think more and more. And I think that for graphic designers, they just have to become, you know, they have to widen their understanding of what's going on. It used to be something that you could just work in Photoshop, but now, for instance, a lot of times when you see people build interfaces that are only in Photoshop, that aren't really using 3D, even if they're fairly flat, it looks like Photoshop. Oh, that looks like a Photoshop trick. You know, that little emboss or the little edges, and you still see that on websites. And you either have to do a lot of work in Photoshop to make that work, or you have to start, you know, adding 3D, you know, 3D tools to the system. And a lot of them are using stuff like Cinema 4D or Strata. In graphic design realms, those are the two probably most popular to make that work.
We just interviewed Chris Harris for Iterate, and he does a lot of work for the BBC and HarperCollins. He did Wonders of the Universe and Atlas, and he calls himself an app director because he said companies like that don't understand what a developer is. And he does a lot of his user experience work in motion and then hands that off because it gives people something they can relate to better in terms of those kind of cinematic visuals.
Yeah,
I think we'll see more of that.
I mean, Alex Lindsay is the 3D guy. You designed Princess Leia's starship.
I didn't design anything. I just implement.
You implemented it, but that is very 3D, right? I mean, it's CGI for a movie, and that was the one in episode 4 where where it was so beautiful and reflective.
Yeah, I didn't. All I did was make that thing fly around. I just wanted to make sure
you did something.
A lot of good people.
You flew a starship, Alex.
Did more than I did. but the point being, that's not going to ever change because you're modeling 3D objects in space for a movie to make them look real.
In a lot of ways, 3D is becoming more and more important for everything from e-learning to corporate communication. I mean, the way we use it now is so different. I mean, I'm using motion capture. We have, right next to where you're sitting, we have a big motion capture studio with you know, 36 cameras that we use for mostly corporate work.
You know, right.
And e-learning. And so
it's not going to go away.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think that the 3D, I mean, it may go away from the user design. And I think that, you know, Apple has a specific, you know, view of that. And so it's one of those things that I guess I feel like my experience with interface design is that we tried a lot of flat stuff and then we always found ourselves back. You know, we'd go to flat, we'd be flat for a while. This is in the 90s. And then we'd end up back in skeuomorphism because people like to touch things. So I mean, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that flow goes.
Okay.
Because it was easier. For us, it was easier to do in Photoshop. So we didn't want to do it in 3D.
Right.
You know, so we would prefer to do everything flat. And then we just found that when we did, when I was working, I did a bunch of interface design for a Broderbund product. And we just found that when we showed them the flat version, which we did a lot of work on, and then we showed them the 3D version, which I rendered out of 3D models and with 3D models and everything else, they prefer them.
I guess that's my point, which is it's hard to make a case that the new anti-skeuomorphic mode is better. It really, to me, seems more like it's style.
I agree.
I mean,
and I think it makes a lot of sense for if you look at all the other design that Apple has. I think that that flat view for Apple makes a lot of sense. I don't know if it's necessarily going to make a lot of sense for all of the developers. And I think that, as I said, if everyone goes one direction, oftentimes the best thing to do is go the other.
Right.
So we may see a handful of developers, you know, going the other direction with the design.
Right.
Also, Apple has a really specific responsibility because they make the devices for the people who don't really want to have to learn a whole lot. They want things that work and seem consistent across the board. And you can make the case that advanced users are going to want to replace whatever the stock calendar app is, with something more muscular, or the stock email app. But there, I think the majority of iPhone users will use the exact same Notes app, the exact same mail app, the exact same this, that, and the other that came pre-installed on the device. So for that reason, it really is important for all of these to look like they were designed by the same hand and are designed to interoperate with one another.
It's interesting to juggle the priorities, because for a lot of people, the interface is the app. And just by changing the interface, it'll look like a whole new experience. Meanwhile, there's iCloud and there's Siri and there's all these things that Apple has to devote a lot of infrastructural time to that aren't as sexy and people don't always notice as much. So balancing those things, given how small their teams are and how tight their deadlines are, is going to be interesting.
But we know it's going to be, as Mark Gurman on 9 to 5 Mac calls it, black and white and flat all over.
Flatter. Yeah.
I love it.
I don't know if it's going to be black and white.
Black and silver, maybe.
The weird thing is, this is another legendary conversation that I had at a conference like 4 or 5 years ago, where a gallery painter was telling me about how when he paints white, he never uses white. And when he paints black, right. He never uses black.
Right.
He wants to combine colors that will look black at first glance, right. But your brain will process as something different.
It's deeper than that. Yeah,
it's exactly. Silver and so charcoal.
Or
something a little bit more subtle.
Well, I was out car shopping. You can't buy a black car. You can buy a black pearl. We can have one with gold flex. I'm not kidding. Gold flex, green flex, blue flex. But they all look black to the immediate eye. But it is. It's a deeper, richer kind of a thing. And when you're buying the Batmobile, you want it to really pop, right?
I mean, nature is full of textures.
Like anodized.
I don't want matte black.
Yeah.
They do make matte cars. I saw a matte black, matte green, khaki green. I guess that was an Army vehicle. Never mind.
No, I saw one. I saw a Defender 90, a Range Rover Defender 90.
That was it.
Black, and I was like, I need that.
It's the stealth rover.
I mean, like nature is filled with textures. There's not a lot that's really flat in nature, and our eyes typically use the density of a texture to sort of pull elements apart and visually distinguish them.
Right.
And if you look at even like Hollywood has gone texture nuts. The new Superman suit is completely texturized.
Ooh, yeah,
the new Star Trek
point.
Suits. And those are almost visual overload. So there seems to be a balance somewhere between total flat.
And in fact, they probably in modern sci-fi would not make Princess Leia's starship so perfect and shiny. They'd distress it.
Well, there was a lot of distress in that. If you go back and look, believe me, I worked really.
I know you did. So I defer to you.
There were 14 passes of distress.
Oh, so they do. Pretty damn shiny, though. I mean, so they have little dings and dents from when she was at the grocery store parking lot and somebody opened their starship next to her. And,
yeah, like when the Jawas was key to the door.
The hard part is that when you start talking about distress on a ship, you deal with this issue where, you know, the specular or the reflections actually pick up the distress first. And so you have to build all the stuff up. But if you actually look at it going by, you'll see all this little specks of stuff of dust and scratches and everything else. And that was most of the work. It's easy to make in a computer. It's easy to make things look clean. It was what was hard was to make it look, because all of that gives a scale. So if you don't have all those little specks, you have no idea how big the object is and it doesn't feel like you can touch it.
Good
but
point.
I became kind of obsessed with. I almost wrecked a couple times taking pictures of gas tankers going by, because I was like, "Oh, that's exactly what I want." And it was, you know,
right.
Anyway, so it's but that is the. I mean, that subtle texture is the key. Although Apple hasn't used a lot of that in there. I don't know. I haven't seen Apple use a lot of grunge.
There was, but again, to talk about trend, there was a time when sci-fi was all about shiny and new,
yeah.
And then it became much more realistic by the time of Blade Runner, where stuff was battered and beaten and kind of grungy.
Yeah,
and the Superman's going through the same transition.
Okay, but isn't part of that the idea that Superman was originally created in the first Superman movie was in the 70s for people who grew up seeing that very flat comic book sort of textures. I think that now you need to add those kind of textures to Superman's costume, A, because the people who are going to be wanting to see it today are the people who grew up like in the 90s when digital coloring allowed you to do cool things with Superman's outfit. Mm-hmm. And also it's the same reason why like Captain America's like tunic top, it used to be just sort of, we don't have the printing technology to tell you what it's made of. But back in the 90s or early 2000s, okay, now we're going to draw it so that it looks like it's chainmail. So it's not just some gaudy top. It actually gives the guy some protection. And so now people want to think that, no, this is some sort of alien space age material that Superman is wearing. He's not just wearing Lycra, for God's sakes. That fabric doesn't even breathe. Yes.
So that's okay, there you go. So it is a style informed by capability, by technological capability.
Right.
And the two work together. But styles change and things will change. And so some of this is style. The other thing is that a smartphone isn't real life. And so you can use design to do things differently. Making it more like real life seems like the most simplistic way of helping people use it. There might be better, more sophisticated ways. And that's why...
Digitally authentic school of design.
Digitally authentic. Yeah, not authentic to real life, but say, hey, no, this is a digital medium. Let's be digitally authentic.
It's like calculator apps. Why does a calculator app have to look like a calculator? Right. That's probably the least efficient way of making a calculator app on a computer.
And in the early days of Superman, they would have. But in the later days of Superman, now we can try something else.
Yeah. Well, and if you look at, I believe it was Propellerhead. The app they have on the iPad.
Reason. You're talking about Reason or?
No, there's an app on the iPad that is creates music. I think I recommended it a couple weeks ago, but it's probably a couple months ago. But what's interesting about it is it does that completely. Like, it doesn't look like any instrument, and you can make music out of it.
And yet, Propellerhead's first big product, Reason, had a rack with cables that would swing. The ultimate skeuomorphic design, right?
It's sort of onboarding people, because the theory was that people didn't really know how to deal with digital, and you had to kind of help them there. But now, they were digital immigrants. You did everything that you could to make them feel at home, and now people are being born digitally native, and they don't need those sort of hand-holding to get them onto the digital platform.
I love it. I love it. All right, let's take a break. Well, I presume there are other rumors. I know we're going to see new MacBooks. We got to see new MacBooks, and I'm curious what Renee's heard with his ear to the ground. One of the confirming facts is that you can't, the stock has dwindled now of MacBooks. Which ones can you not get anymore?
It was the Airs last week.
It's Airs.
It's gone further,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that would indicate probably a new Air coming out. But we'll talk more about that in just a bit. You're watching Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie, Andy Anacco, Alex Lindsay from Down Under. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is very design-centered, design-focused. It's a site for people and hosting for people who want to create their own sites. You can find out more at squarespace.com. Their newest designs are very modern, and I think you're going to see how styles change. They've got in-house designers that are working all the time to add features, to add templates. They just added the Momentum template, which is just gorgeous. It's a full bleed template, so your pictures go edge to edge. And you might say, well, wait a minute, what happens when I go from that 27-inch display? Look, that dog looks great on a full screen, but what about an iPhone? Well, that's the beauty of it. Every design at Squarespace is mobile responsive. That means it automatically reformats to fit the screen that it's on, and your site always looks great. You don't have a separate mobile site. You just have a site that looks great everywhere. That's called design, functional design. Really great stuff. They have a new calendar feature, the events collection. It allows you to share schedule updates. I'm telling you, Squarespace is incredible. So they've got this great content management software. It's easy to use, easy to design. You don't have to be a coder. If you are, though, they have a developer platform that includes an IDE with syntax, colored code, and so forth. But you don't need to know that. It's all drag and drop. And then they've got the best hosting, never goes down, always wonderful. And best of all, you don't pay extra if suddenly your site gets popular. That's the worst thing. Most hosts, all of a sudden you get slashed, dotted, or in the old days, dug, or, twitted. And suddenly you've used up all your bandwidth, and we see it all the time. Sites say, sorry, can't serve for the next 2 weeks because we're done. Or worse, they keep serving and you get a massive bill, not with Squarespace. With Squarespace, the unlimited plan, which is only, show it again, $16 a month when you buy a year plan, $20 if you go month to month, and yes, you can go month to month, is unlimited bandwidth. You'll never get a bandwidth bill. You can be the most popular site in the world. Unlimited pages, galleries, and blogs, unlimited contributors. You could create an iMore plus Crackberry plus everything else for $16 a month. You want to sell stuff? No problem. They've added commerce now. For $24 a month. And they don't take a chunk of your sales. You have unlimited physical or digital products. You get a mobile store, of course, inventory tracking. They even do things like calculate the tax, help you with shipping. Coupon controls mean you can, say, hey, I'm going to be on Twit. I'm going to do a 20% off deal. Here's the offer code. Set that up. Take you 30 seconds. I just think Squarespace is amazing. Now, you don't have to take my word for it, because without a credit card, you can try this right now. Just go to squarespace.com and click the Get Started button. You pick your template and get going. Try that Momentum template. Here's the beauty part. You import all your content. They've got importers for all the blogs into Momentum. And you say, well, that's okay. What else have they got? You pick a new template, and it all just, boom, with a push of a button, reformats. It's modern, folks. It's easy. Now, if after a couple of weeks you say, this is great, it's working for me, and you decide to buy, please use our offer code. That's when we'd ask you to use MacBreak and the number 5 for the month of May. MacBreak 5 is the offer code. That way they know you heard it on MacBreak Weekly in the month of May, and we get credit for it, and you will get, as a thank you, 10% off. Make that first purchase a year purchase. You're going to save a lot of money. MacBreak 5, the offer code. Please try it. Squarespace.com. Just keep it in the back of your head when it's time for you to set up a new website. When it's time for you to, I mean, there's lots of good reasons too. Baby being born, a wedding, you know, Ryan and Veronica, they used a professional wedding site and it was such a pain. They went to Squarespace, had it up and running. And the last time I talked to Ryan, he said, I think it's still up and running. Of course it is. It's always going to be. It lives forever. Squarespace.com. MacBreak 5 is the offer code. We're talking about Macintoshes. Renee Ritchie, iMore.com. You seem to be among the best connected blogs out there. Since the death of Think Secret. What rumors do we know? What do we know? What don't we know? I mean, I think it's safe to say there'll be new MacBook Airs. There'll be something based on the Intel Haswell platform, which came out this week.
Given the last WWDC, they had the Retina MacBook Pro and they had new MacBook Airs. And the MacBook Airs are due an update. The Retina MacBook Pros are due an update. Haswell's in the pipeline. I haven't heard anything about iOS devices. I heard stuff about that early in April, and that seemed to be delayed. So, well, not delayed, but it seemed to not be ready to move forward. But I would be really surprised if we didn't see new Macs with the Haswell chipset, which I'm really looking forward to because I love my Retina Mac, but it's just the GPU is just not powerful enough for that screen. And I will upgrade in a hot second if they announce them at WWDC.
Yeah, I'm saving space on the credit card and on my desk. For anything. Remember those days, Alex, that we, you know, we'd be talking, whatever Apple has, you'd put in an order with Travis down at the Mac store in San Francisco, say, I'll take two of each.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I don't know what it is, but I want one.
Give me one with the largest capacity.
Yeah, just whatever's available. But remember, it was largest capacity that's in the store. You know, so if there's a special one,
right. I don't care. I don't want to wait. Whatever no BTO for you. But Haswell, the biggest difference Haswell will make is improved battery life. And I would love to see a MacBook Air with 10 hours. I would love to see Retina, but I have a feeling that's not what we're going to see, right?
You can never have too much battery, Leo. It's the one thing that we've proven.
I guess I don't really think about battery that much, but I guess I guess where I go in the world, I'm constantly conscious of where I'm going to plug in.
So well, and that's that. Kind of the irony because I never unplug. I mean, I don't really need battery life. I'm either here or at home. I'm always plugged in. But when the times you travel, you want to be able to get in the plane. You're going to Australia, 20-hour flight. Even maybe you have plugs in the seat, but you just would like to be able to do it for a while without having to plug in.
It's so weird because on the airplanes, Air Canada has USB but no Wi-Fi. American and Delta have Wi-Fi but no USB or power. Some of the press conferences
coming.
I go to.
I think we're going to see power standard in a lot of at least, I mean, everything from Economy Plus up. But, I mean, often, I mean, I think a lot of times they're really, I think power in the next 5 years is going to be something that is in almost every seat. You know, for the main airlines.
Andy knows this too, but if you go live blogging, sometimes they have power and Ethernet, sometimes they don't, and then you're watching your battery go down while the guy on the stage is still talking. And
yeah, I mean, that's matter of fact, that's one of the reasons why, like, I like the Samsung Galaxy because it has a pop up battery, and I can essentially have 24-hour battery life with like $40 worth of extra batteries. But I think that part of the problem is that you look at the devices that people are being trained to use every single day, and now people are using more and more tablets that, because of their lower power requirements, are sort of training them to get to not deal with power outlets for 6 to 8 hours over the course of a workday. And so I don't think that – I think that the difference between a laptop that works for 5 hours and one that works for 8 hours is huge. One that works – 8 hours and 10 hours is just as huge as the one before that. Every hour above 10 is not quite necessary, but everybody really wants when you mention to them that this is a device that if it's charged up at the beginning of the day, you will not even have to think about finding the one seat at the Panera Bread that's near the power outlet. Because I've very few moments where I really wish ill upon a human being that I don't know anything about. But if I know that, dude, all you're doing is you're reading a paperback book and you're sitting at the only table that's next to an outlet. Dude, I will buy you. I will buy you the entire chocolate babka over there. I'm talking the $14 party babka over there. If you will just move one table over and let me sit
have
there.
Have you ever done that?
I have never done that. I've never had the guts to do that. It was...
There's a babka in it for you.
Maybe we should make that like part of the we'll add that to the social contract that if you are sitting next to a power outlet and you're not using that outlet, I will buy you a pastry item, let's say above $1.49, less than $4 to get
you. Airports are the same thing. It's just sometimes you really need power and there's just one guy sitting there at the plug and not doing anything.
Yeah. What is that, Alex? Alex has the solution.
So this is something that I maybe I should make this my pick, but I carry something that looks like this at the almost any time I'm traveling. So this one had this is I don't know who.
So just to describe it for people listening, it's I have one just like it. You plug it into the wall. It adds three power ports, outlets. But also two USB outlets for charging.
Yeah, two
buying USBs. It now. And
the big Chad's got one. We all have one.
Or you use a
this is Chad's.
A cube.
Ooh, this is nice.
It has three going either direction, which is even smaller than that, and doesn't you know the advantage of the cube, by the way, is that it works at 240 and 110. The problem with this one is I brought it over to Australia, and if I actually plugged it in, smoke would come out of it.
This is the one Chad has the one from Monster. It's Monster Power.
That would be a little too big. But I like the fact that it has a cord.
Yeah, because then you can hang it off the wall. It's only got one USB port.
The one thing is that almost nobody, if you have one with three or even two, almost nobody will argue with you if you walk over and you get that kind of
look
on your face and you go, is it okay if I just usual, put this in between?
The usual deal I offer, because I use that Monsters to Go cable, one of the great things about it is that it is a little bit larger, but the outlets are spaced away, so you will have no problem putting power brick in there. And the usual thing I offer, especially if that guy looks like he could like really kick my butt if he's having a bad day, I will like actually approach holding this in my hand, making it clear there are three outlets here, say, if you let me plug this in, I will let you have two of these outlets in exchange for the one outlet that you're using right now.
Don't shoot. I've got power. See? Power.
Yeah, then you're not the guy who took the outlet. You're the guy that brought two extra outlets to the party.
That allowed him to charge his phone and his laptop at the same time, right?
So this just shows you there is never enough battery life. We've all got strategies for solving this problem. Will having Haswell make enough of a difference that we'll abandon this? No. So we've kind of basically, it's like spam. We never fixed spam. We just figured out ways to not have to see it anymore.
Deferring the problem.
We deferred the problem, yeah.
Well, but the other thing worth noting is that Intel is really solidifying their position as one of the most influential companies out there. They're not just a part supplier. They have the power to direct the motion and the direction of the industry.
Right.
Every time that they've added a new processor, they have made it a little bit easier for high power consumption devices to compete with low power consumption devices. And whereas 2 years ago we were making fun of Intel based ultrabooks because okay, great, they're kind of thin, but they have three spinning fans, they last for 2.5 hours, you know, on battery. But largely by virtue of the fact that they have this new really cool optimized processor, now they're getting closer and closer to MacBook Air specs.
By the way, these if you search Amazon, the Power to Go power strips are $10 to $15 are not expensive.
Yeah. Buying all of them.
Yeah. I own the Belkin, which is a little more expensive. And that's not as functional because it actually plugs right into the wall. It's a swivel. I always bring that for travel, but I bring that for the hotel. So I'm going to have to get now an airport power strip.
They don't work very well on the flights, by the way. I had to buy a 60-watt adapter because your 85 Retina will turn your airport power off. 70 watts.
Right. So. Right.
Is the Mac.
Ooh, here's a good one. Look at this. This is from Mac Ally. Portable power strip with USB 2.0 hub and charger. $35. This does it all. It's got five USB ports.
Not seeing your screen.
You're not seeing my screen? Oh, this is nice. Can you see it now? There you go.
Man, I want to see this.
This is nice. I'm going to have to order this. $35. It's got a cord.
Oh, but it's only two-prong.
It's not grounded?
Oh, you're right. It's not grounded. What the hell? What is wrong with them?
Well, that's okay. I still have one of those adapters I got from my grandma's house, like before the fire.
The one that has the little metal tab for you to ground it to a cold water pipe. Yeah, that's handy.
I'll say this though: like you're sometimes as a consumer, you really are influenced by design. One of the reasons why I bought that Monster Atlas to Go is that the first time I saw that, wow, someone thought of having the little cord wrap around and then it plugs into itself so it doesn't.
Isn't that cool?
Really clever.
Yeah.
I want to give you $20, Monster.
Yeah. Here's a Mac. Here's a Mac Ally. There's the Monster for $15. We're, for those of you listening, we're just showing Amazon screens. Here's a Mac Ally that has three prong. But see, it's not the cord. I want the cord.
Yeah. See, also, the another factor is that when you have those two prongs are sticking inside of outlet and the entire weight of that is dangling off the outlet, not all of these outlets can like will hold that in place. Whereas if you have if it's a wire and it's a three prong, you get better connection and also better mechanical connection.
We got to get quirky to worky. There's got to be the perfect portable power.
These manufacturers had one job and they had not coming through.
How can they not do that for us? Now I'm engrossed in Amazon.com looking at portable power adapters. But let's get back to rumors for Mac WWDC. It's June 10th. It's 2 weeks from yesterday. What else?
I guess one of the questions also is we had the Mountain Lion preview early in the year last year, and there was a lot of stuff early in the year. There was the education event, there was the Mountain Lion preview, and this year there was no OS 10 preview, and we heard that engineers went over to iOS to help get that ready in time, and what that means for OS 10.9, because we should, if Apple sticks to their new yearly release schedule, we should be seeing 10.9 as well.
Do we need... to be honest, do we need another OS 10? I'm pretty content with Mountain Lion.
I would like them to decouple the built-in app so we no longer have to wait for entire system updates to fix things like messages or anything that goes wrong in any of the individual apps.
They can't push out an update to messages?
They haven't. I mean, on iOS, they've never updated Mail or Safari or anything out of the main product cycle. And
interesting.
Don't know if they've done that on OS 10, but I don't remember, for example, a specific not OS-tied messages.app update.
Huh.
Google does that now. I think BlackBerry does that now. It'd be nice if Apple did that.
Yeah. I know. I don't remember ever seeing that on iOS. I think I've seen that before on Mac OS, so I don't think it's quite as locked in. But
I still think that I think there's a the real reason to do it is there's a progression where we're merging the operating systems, and so 10.9 gets us closer to 7, iOS 7.
If I'm Apple, the other thing I'm looking at is Windows 8, and it's kind of being pummeled in the marketplace, and that is mostly getting pummeled because of the merging of a desktop and a tablet.
The problem is they tried to force it. So the whole thing is that what Windows did is just like, we're going to force you all down this path. But if you're looking at what Apple's doing over a series of years, is that more of the icons look the same. When your power goes out on your laptop, it now looks like your iPhone. When all these things are what they're not doing is trying to, what people don't like to do, what Apple got in trouble with Final Cut was just changing everything
forcing
all the time.
It. Yeah.
Rather than the slow progression where you it's kind of like sneaking up on a horse where
I'm not in a hurry. I don't want him to sneak up on me. I'm going to kick him in the
I don't think it's whether we want it or not. I think it doesn't make sense to maintain two operating systems over a long period of time.
Well,
I think that's the issue.
Apple's in a much tougher boat because they have created a system by which the latest operating system is the default operating system that makes it they make it very difficult for someone to stick with the old operating system by putting requirements on the App Store that require the brand new features. And so whereas Microsoft, I use the word failure of Windows 8 and Windows 7 and Windows Vista advisedly because they really have about 2 years to allow a new operating system to grow hold because they have no problem with somebody sticking with Windows 7 or legacy systems. And they actually do know that since they're selling so many to businesses, it's going to take a while for them to certify a brand new operating system for whatever they're going to do it with. So they have a little bit more freedom to say, okay, people really do want that start button. No problem. Well, next year we'll make sure we put a start button back in. Whereas if Apple were to do something really, really radical and really steam off most of their users, those users might find themselves in a position where I can't use the latest best apps anymore because I absolutely hate OS 10.9. There's something broken about it in terms of what my workflow is that now I can't really use and I want to stick with 10.8. But Apple's making it really difficult for me to stick with 10.8. And now here it is. My laptop is 3 years old right now and it's time for me to buy a new one. Well, just for the heck of it, let's take a look at what's going on the Windows side or let's see what's going on other operating systems. So, I mean, I agree with you that there's going to be more of a merging of the minds. I'm not sure if we're that close to one operating system for everybody. But it's Apple really has to be a little bit more ginger when they make those steps.
Isn't it also, right? I mean, it's silly to say, well, we said we were going to do it every year, whether we need to or not, update it. I mean,
well, yeah, Apple's not typically bound by that stuff.
Yeah. They can say, hey, we said that, but there's nothing. We're, you know, here's the spin. It's perfect. We could stop now.
No, no. It's, we think this is the best operating system. 10.8.5.1.2 is the best Mac OS.
It's the best ever.
The thing that my understanding is, and this might not be a very good one, is that there's no real drive to merge iOS and OS 10. There is a drive to make sure that OS 10 looks enough like iOS so that whatever halo effect they have of people moving from iPhones and iPads to the Mac will be incredibly easy and incredibly familiar. But the architecture of OS 10 is going to stay the same. iOS will just will just keep getting better and better until it subsumes more and more functionality, and then one day the need for OS 10 will drop to near zero, almost like how OS 10 replaced the previous generation OS 9 and things. There won't be a convergence, but one will make the other obsolete.
Absolutely, that's what we've seen. All getting back to Microsoft, all you have to do is look at how Microsoft launched Surface, the difficulties of merging a mobile operating system with a desktop operating system, where you have two Surface RT and Surface Pro. They look very similar to each other, and the start screen is identical, but you're dealing with an operating system now, Windows RT, that really can't do all the heavy lifting that Windows 7 can do, and so that's why it's not really a goodbye for very many people, especially in a world that has an iPad in it and so many really great tablet apps for it.
And they've learned so much. I mean, the architecture for iOS was built so much later than OS 10, and they're probably going to want to continue building on that and not have to keep around OS 10's core, you know, on all the decisions, good and bad, they made a decade ago.
Well, then is the issue perhaps that they did take, I mean, this was only a rumor, that they did take developers off OS 10 to work on iOS. Does that mean that we won't get an OS 10 merely because they don't have the horses to do it?
What's in your wish list? I mean, the interesting thing to me is, instead of thinking about whether we'll get it or not, or what are the obvious steps, like there's things that you could point to for years in iOS and say Apple really needs to handle multitasking. They really need to do something better.
Right, but there's nothing like that anymore, I don't think. That's my point. That was my starting point, was that they don't need to update it. So why? Why even bother?
Well, there's always the back of the drawer sort of features that have been rattling around inside Apple for years and years and years. All the features that both actual usable features and fixes that they've been meaning to get to for a long, long time. But now they've announced iCloud. So now iCloud really has to work. So they're not going to work on that simple esoteric feature that will only make things a little bit more stable, but won't be noticed front, face, and center by the actual users. So it'll get there. I really think that the next time we're going to see a really major update, like in terms of, wow, this is a totally different thing from what I've used it before, I really think it's going to be motivated by brand new hardware, an opportunity that they have either in manufacturing or in display technology or in just simply newly architected CPUs that allows them to really not just make a step forward, but to really reinvent macOS. I don't think right now there's anything that's being released in 2013 or even early 2014 that would allow them to make that kind of really big step.
Here's a quote from our chat room, Web2762. I'm presuming this is Jobs speaking. Teddy told me the most important idea in advertising, Teddy would be Ted Chiat, I presume, is new. It creates an itch. You simply put your product in there as a kind of calamine lotion. It certainly sells products. You want the new one.
I think there'll certainly be a 10. I mean, we've had 10.9 in server logs. We've had iOS 7 in server logs for a long time.
Never mind, it's Mad Men. Don Draper speaking. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so, no, I mean, they're absolutely close. Working on 10.9. The just question is, how big will it be? Will they fix things like full screen apps on multiple monitors? Will they fix messages? Will there be a new Finder that's finally, you know, written in a modern programming language? There's all these things they can tackle.
Is Finder out of date?
Yeah.
Didn't they Cocoa-ize it already, or is it not Cocoa?
I think it is.
I think it is, and I think it's multitasking. I think they did fix Finder with 10.7, 6?
I think it was a fairly recent change.
Yeah.
It was carbon for a long time. I would have to turn to my research assistant Google to verify. But I remember some big announcement saying that we finally got the last bits of. I mean, it had been a hybrid for years and years and years. And I think that they only fairly recently.
Snow Leopard was the first Cocoa based Finder.
But it is kind of, I mean, you're always going to need a file navigator. So long as you're going to be exposing the file directories to the user, you're going to need to have something as simple as that. But I think that the time is long past for Apple to give us something that's a little bit more useful than that, to make the default way of navigating something like Siri, something like
Give Finder me, feels give, pretty crappy,
give me the,
doesn't it?
Give me the Word document that I opened last week and it had something to do with circuses in it. And, oh, okay, it's probably this one. Great.
Yeah, there's natural language. And then there's all sorts of things that, like, FaceTime is still single user. There's no FaceTime conference calling yet. There's a lot of features that would demo very well. And it's always nice to think of what's Apple going to show in the commercial, because those will be the big tentpole features. And there's certain things that'll demo really well that they could easily.
Google's really doing great with this new contextual voice search. And I would got to think that that's something that Apple could build into Spotlight and put Siri in the desktop.
I think it's a lot of work, and I think it's a lot of engineers they don't have.
They'd like to, but they can't. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know if they can do that. I think one thing that they can do with what they have with FaceTime is I do think Google is now really taking the lead in the I want to communicate with anyone however I want to communicate with them, whether it's voice or video or text, and merging that experience and moving it away from cellular and everything else. And I think that, and we've talked about this before, but I think Apple has to sometime in the near future get to a point where I can do the same thing I was doing where I'm calling over Wi-Fi. I mean, I'm much more sensitive to that when I'm here in Australia, where I just want people to have my phone number that I have in the U.S. And when they call it, it comes to me over Wi-Fi. If I'm connected, if they're on an iPhone and I'm on an iPhone, it's all Wi-Fi.
Have you guys done this yet? This is, can you see my screen? This is Google, the new Chrome. Who is Andy Anatko?
Oh, I'm not going to like this.
No internet connection. Well, there you go, and that's what's wrong.
Well, you know, they probably saw last week's show when I lost my gig of Ethernet.
Who is Andy Anatko? Who is his Indian Echo? No, that's wrong. Let's try it again. Who is Andy Anatko?
Listen. According to Wikipedia, Andy Anatko is a 47-year-old technology journalist for the Chicago Sun-Times and tech author.
Pretty cool, huh? Now,
one thing was wrong.
Well, anyway, you're a little older, but that's okay. So, or a little younger. I'm not sure which.
Google takes 10 years off Andy.
Yeah. So, I think that that is the beginning of something significant, and that's coming from my browser. Wouldn't that be something Spotlight? That's Siri's voice, for crying out loud.
Well, it's licensed from Nuance.
I know. But I'm just saying that's where the operating system needs to go.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty amazing.
We're in for a good wearable change. Technology for WWDC. We haven't really heard a lot of watches.
I think the TV and the watch are just bogus bogosity, full of bogusness.
Wall Street demands a new product. Apple is doomed unless they release a new product every 6 months, whole new category every year.
So Apple, let's not. Although, wait a minute, didn't Tim Cook tell All Things D? We've got lots of new categories. What did he say exactly? Yeah. More than one new category coming this year.
We've got refrigerators.
And
I think an Apple refrigerator would be awesome.
We've got a new category of Mac. We're going to make it in Texas, right?
Yeah.
That's this year. Both of those were this year.
I still think the Texas Mac is going to be some kind of Mac Pro or server.
It's a modular Pro.
Something low yield.
Yeah.
So it's got to have higher margins.
Yep.
You know, if you're going to do it here. So I think that and that's good for us. I mean, for those of us who've been waiting for the truck.
And new categories, maybe. I know Renee's adamant that the iWatch is real. Because
they moved it out of prototyping and it's in the product pipeline, but I have no idea how far along it is. Or, you know, and you can cancel things up until they're announced. Apple's very good about not pre-announcing. So until they see up on stage and hold it up, nothing's for certain.
Yeah. Well, Cook is somebody in the chat room saying Cook takes the stage tonight on All Things D11.
There will be no new product announcements at All Things D.
No, but he might. He's been dropping hints like crazy. Yeah.
Well, they need to, because they've been such a long time without product announcements, and they're getting so much attention from Wall Street that his job as CEO is to, you know, raise money and assure Wall Street, and that's what he's going to do when he's given a microphone.
ABC. This is such a big story that Joanna Stern on ABC is live blogging his All Things D appearance tonight. That's hysterical. That is how as this ridiculous this has become.
Well, and I think part of it is that you know, Wall Street keeps on going crazy, and Apple seems to have this kind of almost smug air to them, like, yeah, it's okay, but, you know, we're working on it. You know, no, like they're just, not, they don't seem like they're concerned at all. It's not like they're, you know, they're, they, uh, you know, like they've got something up their sleeve. I mean, that's what it feels like when you see their reactions, is that they feel like they have, and of course they may just be projecting, but it definitely feels like something's coming.
I honestly don't believe that they would make any product that they didn't completely 100% believe in, because they have the one thing that they can always put the thing in their back pocket, which is, here are the numbers. Here's how much we sold last quarter. Here's how much we sold the quarter before that. Notice that this number is significantly higher than that number. Drop the mic, walk off the stage. Right. Tupac fades back into from this 3D.
Now, but this is Kara Swisher and Walt Mossberg interrogating him. He doesn't have control of the pace or the flow tonight. So, but I do think it's reasonable, given the things that he has said in the last month or so, that more tidbits will drop. I don't think there'll be any announcements of any kind. Why would they? Why would they
scoop
themselves?
He'll pull some threads, Leo.
He'll pull on some threads, not all the way. Yeah. Just a little more out.
There'll be areas of interest.
I can't believe that all these gadget blogs are live blogging this tonight. That is amazing.
It's the first time Tim Cook has been on a stage that was outside of an investor sort of experience all year. I mean, people are thirsting for him to say something at this point.
Let's discuss this though. Let's say that they do intend to introduce an iWatch this year. Do they do the iPad thing and saying we're going to show it off and then tell you what day it's going to be available and use those 6 weeks to build up just incredible lines around the block, camping for 2 weeks hype? Or is it going to be, and it's available today, and they announce it in September? Which do you think they would do?
One question is, do they need FCC approval on a watch? They do, because it has a radio.
If it's a new device, they'd have to do that. It doesn't necessarily. I asked someone about this about an iPad a while ago. If it is sufficiently redundant, they wouldn't necessarily have to do it. If it uses a technology or a component that's already been used, they can make the case that we've already established that this is okay.
It's an iPod. Nano. We're fine.
It's an iPod, and there's. Should pay no attention to the strappy thing around it.
Well, I think the interesting thing is if there's a developer platform attached to it. One of the reasons the iPad was introduced early was to give developers several weeks head start to make apps, so that Apple could announce a large and voluptuous app store when the product was shipped. If the iWatch is more like an Apple TV, where it's select channel partners and very carefully controlled by Apple, then they don't need to give developers any time. But if they do want them to be able to support even just a widgeting system of some kind, then they'll need to give them more runway.
And I submit that a watch is such a stupid and product that nobody's going to want once they try it, that they better pre-sell it like crazy so they can really maximize the sales.
Leo, if you could get your Google Now stuff on your watch, you'd be happy.
I would
actually. I'm sorry that like Renee and I were talking over that. We're going to want to isolate that statement so that it could be used in remixes later on. So if you could, we'll go 3, 2, 1. And you say the exact same things. We'll have nice clean audio of that. So not that we'll use it against you later, but we might. 3, 2, 1.
I would get rid of the watch that I'm quite happy with right now in a heartbeat for something.
I have a Pebble and I am not impressed. I don't wear it anymore.
Well,
why would anyone want to? Why? How can you build a new phone that's going to work? I mean, because
I carried a BlackBerry, happy to have it, but once the iPhone came out, I was happy to replace it.
Yeah, but how many tablets were you happy with before the iPad came out?
Yeah, I bought a few.
How many touchscreen devices were you happy with before the iPhone came out?
All right,
it's like I do think that I've been trying to gauge my own interest and my own excitement about an Apple Watch, and I find that when I place myself in an alternate future in which Apple is saying this is a wristwatch that does cool things, but we decided to make a cool wristwatch, I get really excited about it. When I hear them trying to explain that this is a brand new category of device, the likes of which have never been, we removed every pain point of wearing a watch, and I think, oh, so it's going to be $300 and it's going to kind of work, but not really work incredibly well. I do like the idea of it, a watch that runs iOS that gets a couple of weeks of battery life at least, and is primarily a timepiece and does only articulates its screen in ways that make sense for someone going like this for about 5 seconds.
And it may not be called a watch. A watch is just an easy, the same way the iPhone isn't really a phone, but phone makes it so understandable to the mainstream. An iWatch may not be a watch, but the term watch, or even they just call it an iPod Nano Generation X, it just makes it, it's just an easy way for people to refer to it for now, and might be an easy way for Apple to market it in the future, but it would also be a new thing.
Nickname in our chat room says, I love this, it's an iPod, it's a timepiece. It's a thing you wear on your wrist. Are you getting it? It's an iPod. It's a timepiece. It's a thing you wear on your wrist. It doesn't have the same
You need Steve.
Do
we think Apple would ever go after like the glass market?
Look at this. This is the most recent Apple ad. The music ad. What is that?
Oh dear Lord!
What is that? The guy's tapping on the table. He's got a headphones coming out of something. Oh, I guess it's something on his lap.
He's wearing something that Apple would never design or like.
I know. If it's that, ugh.
No, no. The new secret product is the tattoo on his left forearm.
Now that,
forgot we gave a random actor our watch and let him use it in a commercial and then didn't remove it in post-production.
Well, that's a big mistake because we're paying attention to this stuff now.
Apple is very impish that way, where they like to sort of have these hidden Easter eggs about teasing future products. Remember when everyone was doing like the forensic analysis on, I think, the Martin Scorsese Siri ad, saying, "Oh, do you notice that the aspect ratio of the phone he's holding is not correct for an iPhone 4S?" Actually, yes, it is. He's just not holding it directly. Apple would not forget that he gave a production sample of an unannounced product. They would really not do that.
Yeah.
Dude, that's a Dell move. That's not an Apple move.
Okay, well, let's take a break and come back. You could tell me why I would want an Apple Watch. Maybe it's not a watch. It's just something you wear on your wrist that reminds you of a watch.
Apple product category.
But it does something much more, and I'd like to know what that is. But don't tell me yet because we're going to take a break.
Let you go.
We're going to talk about Gazelle. Actually, this is a perfectly appropriate time. We know something is happening, and we know that may involve things you want to buy. We also know that you may want to get rid of old things that are no longer shiny. That's what Gazelle was made for. I had somebody call me on the radio show, said, "I don't want to go to all the trouble to eBay it, but I got this phone. What can I said? Very simple. Gazelle, gazelle.com. They'll buy it from you. In fact, they'll give you a very good price. $10 extra right now for the iPhone 4S because they know people are going to definitely be looking for something. And the thing is, this is not a commitment to sell, by the way. This is merely getting a quote from Gazelle that's good for 30 days on any of these items. They've added some new tablets. Look at all the new tablets they take now. Not just the iPad, but also Samsung, Google Nexus, Kindle Fire, Surface. Had enough of that Surface? An Asus tablet. Hey, Chad, because I broke my Surface. I wonder, they probably won't give me any money for a broken Surface RT. Yeah, probably. It's broken. Wi-Fi, yeah, that's all they have. Do they have the choice of, it's 64 gig. They have the choice of, it doesn't work. Sometimes they'll buy stuff that doesn't work. Broken, yeah, see, they're not going to take it.
Crunchy.
I got everything. They're not going to take it. Please take it, please. I'd love. Oh, $19. Ow. Hey, at least they pay me, right? Most of your stuff is working. It will get more money. And actually, they will buy non-working iPhones for a lot more money because they can reuse the parts. iPods, tablets. Let's take a 3G iPad because I think there's a lot of people want to get rid of their iPad because they know a new iPad's in the market. Get an offer on that 32. $200. Look at that. That's a 32 gigabyte Wi-Fi only for $200. I'm telling you, go there. It's just fun to see what your stuff is worth. Go through that drawer, the gadget drawer, the closet, the stuff under your bed. It's collecting dust. Turn it into cash. You can get a check, of course, but they'll PayPal it to you if you need it right away. And even better, if you're an Amazon buyer, and I always buy stuff on Amazon, get an Amazon gift card because they'll bump that up 5%, kind of give you back the Amazon affiliate fee. Gazelle locks in the quote for 30 days, so this is not a commitment to sell. You're just finding out what it's worth. However, you might be surprised at the thousands of dollars under your bed right now. Gazelle has paid over $100 million to 500,000 customers over the last few years. Go there now. Find out what your old gadgets are worth and maybe get some money for your new gadget. Gazelle, GAZELLE.com. All right. If I were going to – I have a watch fetish. And I have bought many a watch, some of them somewhat expensive watches, because I like watches.
Panerais and Rolexes all?
Yeah, that kind of thing, although not that expensive. But that's jewelry. So if I could have jewelry with functionality, I might be even more interested. I'm willing to wear a watch.
But what if here's the situation. Like, you really put your finger on it, that there are – such a wide price range of watches. There's a lot of people that expect that will never want to pay more than $30 for a watch, and they never want to buy it outside of a drugstore. But there's so many people who will buy $100, $200, $300 for not even a particularly spectacular wristwatch. How many of those people could be accessed if you simply pitch this to them as, it's $129, it's a really cool watch. It does other things, but for now, focus on the fact that it has a really cool face, it has beautiful Apple design, and maybe it's not going to be the watch that you will wear every single day, but it will be in your two or three watch rotation. Don't you think that Apple could sell it, assuming they're not going to charge stupid prices for it, don't you think they could sell it as it's just a really cool timepiece? And by the way, if you stroke two fingers against the bezel like this, you will open up a drawer that will make it do cool things. But before then, it will just be a really cool watch. Will they do that?
That puts them in the jewelry business.
It's not a gadget.
It's jewelry.
It doesn't have to, jewelry. Well, how about just a cool watch?
A cool watch is jewelry.
So if I go upstairs and get my Millennium Falcon wristwatch, the one that has like a die-cast Millennium Falcon, like a pocket watch, we have to pop open the top. Would you identify that as jewelry or as a cool watch?
Well, that's something else. But I don't think they're going to sell a Millennium Falcon watch.
Answer. It's a cool watch. A Millennium Falcon wristwatch is a cool watch.
I think Andy's right about the price points, though. I mean, you do have the drugstore watches, you do have the Rolexes and the Panerais, and Apple's probably not going to appeal to either of those audiences. But they could probably make a case the same way, you know, Steve Jobs made his case for the iPhone by looking at what was wrong with styluses and hardware keyboards.
Right.
And he made his case for the iPad by pointing out there's sometimes something that needs more than a smartphone, but less than a tablet, where they could say these, you know, this is an Apple watch, looks, you know, Johnny Ive, beautiful, but also, you know, it's all your Siri cards and widgets are there, all your notifications center stuff is there, will give you this functionality, because with Apple, the form is supposed to dictate the functionality, and that could be intriguing enough that it gets sort of the Apple TV like hobby foothold, and all it really does is enhance the value of Apple's ecosystem. So when you buy an iPhone or iPad and you also want to have a watch, you can get all these extra things to go along with it.
For how much?
With Apple, it'll be like the original iPhone and the original iPad. It'll be a little bit too pricey and a little bit too big and a little bit not perfect. And then generation 2 and 3 will make it thinner and lighter and much more fantastic. And we'll all make blog posts saying, this is the iWatch that Apple should have shipped to start with.
But that's kind of a difficulty where if they do follow that program, if it's too expensive to start with, it will always be too expensive. They will always put more features into it, and they'll make it thinner, and they'll improve the battery life. But if it starts off as a $300 watch, it will never be anything other than a $300 watch. I think they really do have to not only get below $200, they have to get $200, and you've got change left over for dinner and a movie after that.
What was the Square now? It was $149 starting?
Yeah.
You can't make anything good for $149.
No,
my Falcon wristwatch costs $38, Leo.
You're not going to get me in that conversation.
I think I already got you.
Yeah, I learned my lesson. It's an electric fence.
I'm in the position of saying that a Millennium Falcon wristwatch isn't cool. Well, that's fine. Maybe I just won't, you know. Maybe the one that I bought for you is not. Maybe I'll just hold on to that.
I'm not saying Apple's not going to do it, but I don't. I find it difficult to think that of what they could do. You know, for instance, you say Google Now cards. Yeah, that would be cool. Except Apple doesn't have anything like that.
Well, they have notifications, which is really ambitious and really flexible, that they could push a notification of that form to pretty much anything with a screen and a pulse. And so if they just used it as a target, it's just a cool watch and it's just a target for notifications, that could be cool enough. And they've also demonstrated with their own in-house apps that third-party apps can only push very boring notifications, but Apple internally can build ones that have functionality and have really nice design to them. So they don't have...
They have to add a lot of functionality to their notifications. Their notifications aren't that functional at this point.
Well, look at the ones that Apple produces for their own apps. You know, they can tell you the weather, they can tell you the stock times, they can give you directions.
Forgive me because I stopped using the iPhone. Will Apple Maps tell me that what the traffic's like on the way home ahead of time? Like, say, this would be a good time to leave because...
They don't do predictive yet. They will update you in real time if you've got...
Well, that's the whole point of Google Now is predictive, right?
But we're not talking about Google Now. We're talking about a mechanism for taking a piece of information and putting it on a small screen of arbitrary size. And the notifications system that they have for iOS is very muscular, and it really can handle that sort of stuff. If they wanted to go into that direction, all they would have to do is decide what they wanted to fill that little box with. They wouldn't have to build a brand new box for it.
And by the way, it probably isn't just a thing that has a strap. It probably is the bracelet, right?
If they want a lot of battery in it, has to be.
I don't know because how many different wrists are you going to have to support with one size fits all wrist band?
If you look at this, I mean, this is the Nike Fuel Band.
Fuel Band works, and Fitbit has one too.
And it wouldn't bother me if this was thicker. It really wouldn't bother me.
What if it were half an inch wide and very thin and a flexible screen?
Chock full of battery, so it lasts a long time.
Also, Alex, you're ignoring something in that your Nike band does not have a specific face that has to be facing the right way at all times.
True.
Yeah. Oh, so it can't really rattle around.
It has a display.
You're not checking it like several times a day, are you?
Yeah.
I do mine.
I check. Here's the worst part is I probably check my Nike band like 10, 15 times a day. Because I'm constantly managing. Hey, once you start setting a goal at 5,000, on your Nike Fuel Band,
you do check it a lot
all the time.
I am on record as saying there's no Apple TV. I'm going to go on record, even though everybody says there's an iWatch, including Renee Ritchie, who has very good sources. I don't think there's an iWatch.
Did we get that on tape?
I think there's neither a TV, and I've said from the beginning there's not a TV, and I don't think there's a watch. I think it's a dumb. Both of them are dumb products.
I think both of them exist. The question is, as Renee says, will they actually? I do believe that they're making watches in the same quantity that Google now has copies of Google Glass, enough that they could put many copies of these out there and see how well they work in the real world. But yeah, I mean, Apple is notorious for it's not a real thing. It can be boxed. It can be shrink wrapped until they decide they want to ship it.
What do we think of the different approaches? Because I think that this is two very, very classic, a very classic contrast here is the way Google is doing Glass and the way that Apple does what it does is that, you know, Google really opens itself up to other people like Apple if they decided that Glass was really working to do something like that. But at the same time, also obviously Google is getting an enormous amount of feedback, you know, over it by doing
and maybe even more important publicity.
Oh my gosh! Well, yeah, just data everyone's too. Talking about glass, 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 glass.
That's absolutely exactly the way they would have to do a product like that. Especially they're saying that we're not shipping this yet. We have this cool idea. We want to put it out there and see what people want to do with this. That way, they can always roll back on their ambitions, and they can always make their ambitions exceed what they originally had, depending on what kind of feedback.
Wow!
They're
but that would be a big shift in strategy. I cannot think of Apple ever doing that.
Right.
That would be a huge shift in strategy. Google's done it. Microsoft does it all the time. Apple's never done that. They've said, here's what it is. You like it or not.
They've talked about the Apple TV being a hobby for a long time, and it's now become, I mean.
Well, that's only because it didn't sell. They didn't say, here, try this for a few months, and we'll come back and fix it. They sold it hard, and it didn't sell, so now it's a hobby.
For Tiger Woods, golf was a hobby until he started making money.
When they made him a hockey puck, I think that's when it really, it changed pretty dramatically. I don't see a lot of Rokus and Boxies and everything else. When I go to, whether it's corporate, literally like corporate boardrooms and people's houses, what I see are lots of little Apple TVs, and the corporate rooms are just using it to sync their iPads for presentations.
Apple really turned it into a dongle for its iPad.
For so
really.
Many things, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. Otherwise, you buy a Roku.
And that's what an iWatch could be. It could be another dongle, very similar to the Apple TV. It's just a way to make your iPhone and iPad experience better.
Yeah.
Does it make it better? That's my question. Why does it better? Because it's on my wrist than here.
Because you don't have to check your phone. Your notifications are just there.
And that's so hard to do.
iOS 7 could be. They did a lot of interesting things with iOS 6 that we haven't seen yet. And iOS 7 could have a better version of Notification Center. It could have more predictive engines in Siri.
Right. Yeah,
so anything that they announce for iOS 7 is going to be interesting just in terms of where else they could use that technology.
So that's one thing we'll be looking for on June 10th. You're absolutely right. Because you said it, Andy, if they could put predictive technology, the Google Now cards on there, that would be great. You got an appointment coming up is one thing, but saying the weather tomorrow, bring an umbrella, your traffic conditions are bad, you might want to go somewhere else. I see you're at the airport. Here is your barcode for your ticket. Those things would be valuable.
And
Google can do that, though, because you're going through Gmail and Google has your mail.
Well, I mean, Google has a huge advantage, but Apple's advantage is that Google can put Google Now in, but any manufacturer can just take it out, or they could replace it with S Voice, or they could do anything they want.
Yeah.
Where Apple would deploy it across every iOS device. Right. So it might not have as many features, or we don't have as much deep integration, or Apple might not choose to do those things, but Apple has access to your calendar and access to your location and access to the weather. And they could put together a pretty compelling thing that suddenly, I don't know how many, but 100 million users would have all at once.
Right. And by the way, Google Glass has all of those, and I'm still not compelled by it. So it's got to be, partly that's because you're wearing it here, which is kind of...
That's okay, because you can't buy it.
Yeah. I did buy it, $1,500, and I'm making Jason wear it.
I'm sorry, the royal you.
Yes. This royal we did buy it, $1,500 later. I don't know. I mean, let me ask you this, Renee. Are you dead certain it will be announced, an iWatch will be announced this year?
No. Okay. All I have heard is that it has left the lab. There's a lot of things that are in
the
lab.
That's interesting.
Really crazy things are in the lab. I've heard the TV has not left the lab, but the watch has left.
It's taken the next step.
Yes.
Which is,
and there's a long step between leaving the lab and being a product.
Yeah, part of the reason I'm cranky is I want to believe. I really would love to see Apple come out with a brand new product category that just. I want to see the next iPhone. I want to see the next iPad. I want that new product category. I want to believe big time. I'm having a hard time believing. That's all.
I'm saying. Look how long it took from Purple to get to the phone. I mean, that was years. Apple took 2.5 years.
Takes a while
before the phone launch. Yeah.
It's all about the iKitchen.
The what?
You know. The iKitchen, refrigerators, stoves, ovens that all sync with your iPad.
That is, those are shoals that many a company has cast their boat upon.
And you know, the company that can do it is Apple.
Well, I mean, I saw at Samsung, I did the tour with, at CES, I did the tour with Samsung and LG, and they showed us all the Android-powered fridges and phones and the fridges and the little Roomba ripoffs and the stoves that you could do. And Apple doesn't have an appliance manufacturing wing the way those companies do, and Apple doesn't typically license iOS the way that Android is licensed. So for Apple to make an appliance play, they'd have to, if they stick with their old model, have to get into manufacturing.
By the way, maybe supporting this, according to Foss Patents, Apple has filed... a complaint not only against the Galaxy S4, but apparently identified two patents infringed by Google Now. And this is the first time Apple's really taken on Google directly. They've always been using proxies. So that's interesting. If Apple says, oh, no, we have a patent on stuff Google Now is using. And these are Siri patents probably. But that's intriguing.
Yeah.
Let's see how far they get with that.
Yeah, I'd be very interested.
But also, I think that given how important Google Now is, that's a check that any company that's invested in that would be more than happy to write. They'll fight that to the very end. And then if there's a $1.2 billion judgment, saying great, goodbye.
Yep. I think Google's invested in Now, and one of the reasons Apple has attacked other companies besides Google is it's a little nerve wracking to say, okay, now we're going to take on Google. But that's clearly what the goal of all the Android. Yeah. I mean, Samsung's a tiny company who will roll over for you by any means.
Yeah. Also, I mean, from the Google I/O keynote, one of the things that really hasn't been talked about is that every single they talked about so many different products, no hardware whatsoever in sight. They talked nothing about nothing but software products, and every single one of them conveys information to the user in the form of cards. Even if it's a big, huge, like double retina screen, there's always the key information on that map about here's the restaurant, here's the ratings, here's other. It's presented in the form of a card. It is designed to be really the molecule of information that Google can deploy to any device of any kind with any limitations that this device might have. So, I mean, it's going to be a signature of Google's design aesthetic. And so, really, this is the checkbook is open. They're just using the courts to negotiate the price for assuming that courts agree that some of their technology does infringe. Fine. We'll write the check and we'll move forward.
I'm just waiting for the Google Now phone. Forget the Facebook phone. The Google Now phone is really interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of called Android. Oh, I know what you're saying. In fact, I said that to the Google Plus folks. You know, you need to do I told Bradley Horowitz, you need to do with Google Plus what Facebook did with Facebook Home.
And I would love that. I would love Plus and Now just to be the home screen experience with the lock screen experience and let Motorola make the hardware and just let Google take Android back.
I think that's, I would be, he, let me put it this way. He went, I think he gave me a pretty good confirmation that Google Now, in the same style that Facebook Home, Google Plus and Now would be on the phone. I think that's absolutely in the future and not too far off either. John Stewart, this is the portion of the show where we get us pulled from YouTube. Like to do that on every episode.
Would it help if like the three of us hum a public domain song while this video is out, so that listeners could still hear the audio, but to a scanner would seem as though we're doing battle hymn.
We have tried every stupid. I don't even want to do tricks anymore, right? I want to just say in your face, YouTube, take us down now. And then of course they do. So maybe that's not the best attitude. But we've tried. What have we done, Chad? We've angled it. We've small screened it. We've done all sorts of stuff.
Well, it's the sound. Yeah. It's the sound. It's not the
content ID is sound. All right. So, Chad, can you play the? Do you have the? John Stewart. I don't have it in front of me. Do you have the John Stewart bit?
Cook faces.
Okay, everybody, hum the battle hymn of the republic.
Some accountability for Apple Maps. I mean, come on. Maybe some prison time.
This is not working.
No, I think it's just annoying to the viewer.
Actually, Apple CEO Tim Cook was called in to face the wrath of senators wondering how Apple had avoided paying taxes on $44 billion in income in the last 4 years, in part by stashing over $100 billion in nearly tax-free offshore subsidiaries. Go get them, Duke boys!
I'm very proud of Apple.
We love the iPhone and the iPad. I got one right here.
You've managed to change the world, which is an incredible legacy.
I harassed my husband until he converted to a MacBook.
Your products are great.
My granddaughter even knows how to use it.
I love Apple. I love Apple.
I want to you. I want to... People. What the hell was that? What is the opposite of a genius bar? Apparently, there is nothing Apple can do to get us mad at them. They're dodging taxes. They got suicide prevention nets outside their health factories. We could find out they're using kitten hearts to power iPhones. And we'd be like, well, if it doubles battery life, I'll take two. In fact, the hearing was less, we're angry at you for breaking curfew, and more like, what time do you think you should get home?
If you were in our position, how important do you think it is that we change
That's
the tax code?
That's why I'm not a big fan of The Daily Show anymore.
Another country what? In one of these emerging markets from...
Why not? You don't like kitty cats?
Do you think we have to
no,
be
because, I mean, this is Senate testimony, which goes on forever and forever and forever.
And you just chop it up.
Well, and also it's like, okay, so you found points during this proceeding where they said, we love Apple. Hey, I've got my iPhone, but we can't stand how you're doing your thing.
It's slanted. You're right.
It's not so much slanted as it's a comedy show and they're trying to do comedy.
Right.
But it's like, okay, fine, whatever. It makes me, I haven't seen it. It makes me want to seek out the, go online and find the actual testimony to see what the senators actually said. It's like, a friend of mine once summed up the typical like TED conference talk, the points that TED speakers make, saying interesting if true, which is how I regard like Daily Show. Okay, interesting if that actually happened.
You have to give him some credit for saying, well, who made these arcane tax laws? Apple's not breaking the law. Who made these arcane tax laws? Congress. Why did they make them? Well, it wasn't you and me that encouraged Congress to make these laws that, let offshore corporations go without paying taxes.
Exploration tax credits stay in place, and then Big Agra makes sure that equipment depreciation credits stay in there, because that's the rub of this entire exercise. Corporations are the only reason the tax code is so complicated in the first place.
Right.
Those offshore loopholes didn't get carved out by poor people.
That's the real point, and I think that's a legitimate point.
Right.
We got the best Congress money can buy, too. Quote Will
well,
Rogers.
I mean, I think that also the issue is that it's very difficult. It's not just tax code. I mean, how do you make that actually work? They're taking oftentimes simple loopholes that are actually there for a reason, and then they
I think they're there for a reason is right. there so companies can offshore their income and not pay taxes on it.
I mean, the reason, but the way Apple's doing it is mostly because they're manufacturing everything offshore. So what, you know, offshore. So what's happening is they're paying their offshore subsidiary for the hardware that's coming back in. And so, you know, so they're basically taking the money that they made outside of the country and keeping it there. Or the subsidiary.
I don't think that's the case. They're not making them in Ireland.
They're making them.
They have a $30 billion entity in Ireland that has zero employees, but made $30 billion. And that's why it pays no taxes anywhere.
Well, no, but
that's not about manufacture. That's about using a tax loophole to offshore your profits. Yeah,
every tech company I know of uses.
They all do it.
Yeah.
But it gets them off the hook to say it's legal and Congress made these laws. But I think Stuart makes the more salient point, which is why these laws were made. And they were not made, Alex, because they serve some purpose. They were made so that corporations could use them to not pay taxes.
Yeah, definitely. I think that a lot of these tax loopholes are built with something that remotely looks like
sometimes
a reasonable level. I mean,
sometimes
we give people tax with enough math, you can get around an awful lot of taxes. I mean, so the thing is that we give people tax credits or tax breaks for their houses, you know, because we want people to buy houses.
And that's one that benefits you and me. But I don't think there's any case where either you or my company could put money into Ireland and not pay any taxes anywhere.
There's probably also a differentiation between money that Apple earned outside the U.S. and money that Apple sheltered outside the U.S. And
absolutely.
I don't know if they've clarified
in the tech community, though, I do have to say that I find it amusing that people who, when people are using BitTorrent to download their music, and they say, well, they should just change the business model because it's broken. Right. And then they complain about offshore taxes is a little
contradictory. So you're saying that nobody can complain unless, you know, he who is without sin shall cast the first stone.
People in the tech industry who've been talking about BitTorrent for a long time and are just, you know, like the music industry is stupid and they should just figure it out and then they are abhorred by what Apple has done legally. I'm not saying I don't have a problem with either one. so the thing is, I don't have a problem with Apple. But I'm just saying that when people say that they're very upset about it, I just find it to be a little of a contradiction because, I think that one of the big reasons that all of this is occurring is because the United States corporate tax is one of the highest in the world. And that is a lot of these companies would bring it back.
Nobody pays it. Maybe the highest in the world, but that's kind of for show because nobody pays it except you and me.
But the issue is that the reason that they don't even try to pay it is because it's so high, you know? And so the thing is that it's not even if it was lower, there's a lot of inconvenience. Apple is borrowing money here so they can keep their money offshore. Now there's some place where that math starts to make sense for them to just bring it all back.
Right.
You know? And so the thing is that, you know, I get that it makes good politics. No, another thing in the politics that make 35%, we're pushing it to the corporate taxes. And what we're not getting is any money out of that because we're idiots.
Yeah. And so it's very convenient for Apple to say, you see, if they just lowered the tax rates, everything would be fine. Meanwhile, lobbying hard to make sure that those tax rates mean nothing because they've got loopholes that allows them to avoid paying taxes entirely.
Not lobbying enough because some of the Congress people are telling them they're not putting enough money into Washington to avoid these.
Yeah, but don't you think that's for show?
Apple's not lobbying hard for show?
No. Don't you think that whole congressional hearing is pure show?
Yes. Absolutely.
It has nothing to do with changing the law, and the law will not change because Apple and other corporations, and I bet you Apple did not do the lobbying for these tax laws. I bet you it was other corporations like General Electric that lobbied for these tax laws.
But to Alex's point, when you get to 99-cent songs, people stop stealing. And maybe if you get to a tax rate that Apple... Alex.
No, absolutely. Go ahead. Keep on going.
No, I was going to say, when you at 35%, you might have a lot of companies that balk, but if it's at a different rate, you might have a lot of companies who just think it's easier to pay it.
I think 0% is always favorable, even over 5%.
But the thing is that I don't know a lot of people who steal music anymore because we have Spotify, we have iTunes, we have all these things that make it cheap and easy for us to handle that process, you know. And is the music industry making as much money per unit? No, but are we really stealing that as the way way many of us did in the distant past, that has changed a lot. And I think that is the issue is that they're not going to be able to solve this. And part of why they're not going to be able to solve it is because states are competing against states and countries are competing against countries for these corporations. These are multinational, international companies that can play all these countries off of each other. And they're not going to be able to sort that out because the individual countries and the individual states have a vested interest. The smaller ones have a vested interest in making this available to them. You know, so these countries are in collusion.
Ireland's been saying, why are we being blamed for this? It's not our fault.
We give you Guinness.
Ireland,
come on.
Ireland built this infrastructure. Ireland built the infrastructure.
Of course they did. That was the Irish miracle, which collapsed.
But what we do in the United States, for instance, we're in the film industry, you know, and in California you don't get any subsidies, but in you get 25% tax credits, 40% tax credits in other states, whether it's Louisiana.
Actually, we get a reduced sales tax in the Bay Area if you're in the film or video industry.
That's nothing. That's chicken.
I know, but believe me, I take advantage of it.
But we're talking about 25% tax credits on your production of hundreds of millions of dollars, not just the equipment.
No, because they want the film industry to bring other money in there. I understand.
So the thing is that this is a microcosm of the exact same thing where states have decided it's in their best interest to pull work to their state by producing tax incentives to do that.
Yeah, Ireland did that. Exactly.
Ireland did that. Other countries do that because it brings a lot of
money. It hurt them in the long run. It hurt them badly. In fact, the country really suffered economically in the last few years because of this very low corporate tax rate. But that's another matter entirely. Actually, somebody from Ireland says, you're wrong. The Irish miracle collapsed because of property taxes. All right. Well, I don't know. I'm not an expert. Let's watch the Windows 8 ad that takes iPad Siri in vain. This is another YouTube killer here.
Sorry, I don't update like that.
By the way,
I'm sorry. I can only do one thing at a time. I guess PowerPoint isn't one of those things. Should we just play chopsticks?
So I think. Oh, and this is the selling point right here: iPad $699, Windows RT or Windows 8 Pro $499. There's only one device, the Asus Vivo, that's that cheap. Yeah. But our Windows guys, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, thought that was a brilliant ad that worked very effectively to make people want to buy Windows. You agree?
I don't know if it made people want to buy Windows, but it's exactly the sort of ad that Microsoft has to put forth. They can't. They have to produce the ad of the underdog that's having trouble convincing people to buy an RT tablet instead of an iPad. And if you want to do that, you say, well, here are things you absolutely positively cannot do with an iPad that you can do with our product that costs just as much money and by our view does more. So from that point of view, I thought it was a brilliant ad. You're not going to fight an iPad on iPad grounds. You're going to fight it on Windows RT grounds. And you've actually got a couple clubs in your bag for that.
It's a Droid Does commercial. It's very similar to what Motorola was running against the iPhone earlier. But the tablet market is interesting because, by and large, everyone has tried to compete with the iPad by offering a more computer-like experience, and every one of them has fizzled. And it might just be that the iPad struck the right balance of just enough computing to appeal to a very, very large audience, and those people are intimidated, off-put, or not desirous of a more computer or more desktop-like tablet, and that's why they're not doing well. And no amount of I'm a Mac, I'm a PC advertising will change that. They will have to make a more user-friendly, simpler, more wide-encompassing product. Not, you know, compromised.
Yeah, I mean, because if you buy an iPad, it's not because being able to do PowerPoint and more than one thing at once is probably not on your list of check boxes.
My mother has never not once asked for either of those features.
Why can't I do PowerPoint and have two things going at once? Right. Now, the price is pretty compelling. Of course, they use a 64-gig iPad for $699 to compare against a 64-gig Windows 8 tablet.
And the amount of space you have left on iOS after the operating system is installed is significantly more than.
Right. Right.
I'd like to see Microsoft do a similar ad, but only compare. Here is a convertible tablet that runs actual Windows 8. And you can get this tablet from Apple that runs a sort of subset of what your desktop apps would do and recontextualize it. It works with a keyboard, even though it doesn't really work very well with a keyboard. No mouse, no controls like that. Or for the exact same amount of money, you could have the machine that runs the exact same operating system you have inside your office and inside your home PC. And it also will be nice and detachable and can read comic books and watch movies. And you can also play chopsticks on it.
Actually, that's a better selling point, isn't it? Yeah.
But not having Windows might be the biggest feature of the tablet market right now. And no Windows 8 commercial can address that because it runs Windows. And people might be running.
That is, by the way, that tablet is not an RT tablet. That's a Windows 8 Pro tablet for $450.
Really?
Yeah. No, it's not an RT tablet.
I think my problem is that I still have a hard, when I look at the Windows tablet, I have a hard time seeing my kids or my parents using it, you know, and I think they're definitely going to get some of the converted, but I don't know how big that converted market is. A lot of them have already jumped on Android, have already jumped on iOS, you know, and they're invested in those platforms. And so the early adopters that I think are technologically driven that would have picked this up have already picked their winner, so to speak, and it'll be much harder to pull them out. And the new people, I just don't think it's a compelling product for an average consumer.
Here is a follow-up video. I don't know if this is an ad or it's a minute long. It might be an ad. It might just be a follow-up video, but it speaks directly to a hardware comparison. This is also from Microsoft. iPad versus Windows. Vivo Tab RT. Oh, that's an RT. That is an RT tablet.
Yeah. See, the cheapest Surface Pro is $899.
Yeah, you're right. Well, they're not comparing it to Surface. They're comparing it to an Asus. But okay, this is an RT tablet.
That's a different one.
Yeah. I thought the Vivo was Windows 8 Pro.
It's a MacBook Air comparison.
No, it isn't. Really not.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think Apple has a salient point when they say that they don't want to please you by giving you a cheap price day one for a product that may or may not be good on day 100. They want to give you a product that you'll enjoy for the lifespan of that
this,
product.
I have to say, though, but this is pretty netbook. Compelling. If you wanted the features like an SD card, I mean, that's compelling. I don't know if people will look at that and say, well, God, I don't need an SD card, but that's a much better device.
I love the iPad, but that presumes that someone has $400 or $500 or $600 or $700 to spend on a computer that doesn't do as much as the notebook that they might need for their day-to-day use.
Right. That's fair, but it may let them do more than they could do on that notebook. I mean, the potential of the device is not the same as the potential of the person to use that device. I mean, I think a lot of people do more on an iPad. A lot of people can do as much on an iPad as possible where they can't do the same potential on a...
A lot of people can, but when you, I think it's the difference between basic day-to-day equipment and the thing that you can use that's better than this in some circumstances. I mean, there's a reason why Toyota sells a lot of four-door sedans. They're not the prettiest things out there. They're not the most high-performance things out there. But when you need to get yourself and two or three kids and some groceries on 2 hours worth of errands, you don't want the two-seater Tesla. You want something that's – and sure. You don't want the motorcycle. You want something like that. I'm not using this as a way to disparage the iPad, but I'm saying that we have to give attention to the market that they have X dollars to spend on a home computer that has to do a lot of things. And I am the guy who travels with an iPad and not my 15-inch $2,000 MacBook Pro. So I know from where I speak of the things that iPad can do. But when you talk about an average user who's said that, well, no, you can't actually use the iPad for this, so long as you work around here. Oh, you have a file? Okay, here are the steps you have to take in order to get that file off of this common device you have right now and put it onto that iPad. Oh, no, you can't just stick it in there. You have to, you know, everything's so tightly sandboxed that you can't just introduce a file. It's things like that. So I agree
with you absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. But I think those people are buying it instead of another Windows PC and not necessarily instead of an iPad all the time. So it splits that market rather than competes directly with the iPad.
I think that we're going to be arguing in circles around each other. And we're kind of close to the end of the show, so I see this as being a more interesting thing that's going to happen at the end of 2013 and 2014 when Windows 8 gets its act together a little bit better. Manufacturers, right now, if you want to buy a Windows 8 a full bore Windows 8 convertible tablet for the price of an iPad, you are talking about like an Atom processor, not something that's really, really muscular like a Surface Pro processor. But I think in 2014, when all these things come together, and now I spent $850 for my 64 gig iPad with 3G LTE. When you take that amount of money and see, well, what can I buy for that in the Windows 8 space? And when they can finally say, well, here's something that's as well built as an iPad, has the same basic range of software as an iPad, but also can be used as your one and only notebook computer as you travel with, that's going to be an interesting argument to make.
Yeah, I agree with that completely.
I guess the question is, do they have that much time? I mean, I think a lot of people that would buy it. I mean, I think that that's the issue is that this market is moving very, very fast, you know, between Samsung and Google and Apple. And I feel like they're just tripping along trying to figure this out. And again, I mean, like when I look at the average, I mean, again, the average consumer, when I say average consumer, I think of my parents and my kids, and they are using tablets way more than they would ever use a laptop. And my parents never use the computer to sync their iPad. I mean, it's like that's kind of the what they do with it. The and my kids wouldn't touch it. You know, will never know what a keyboard looks like.
Right,
like a physical keyboard. My kids they'll never grow up with that. You know that yeah, and so yeah.
They're mobile native.
What?
They're mobile native. They're not transitioning.
They're not going to.
Wait till they get into high school, Alex. Then say.
Yeah,
that.
I mean, I don't think they have the sort of tasks that require them to use something that's different from what
I'm just saying. I don't think my kids are ever going to know how to use a mouse. I don't think they're ever going to know how to type on a keyboard. No.
Wow.
Oh, mouse I might give you. Keyboard, no. Until and it's not only a question of having voice.
What I mean by keyboard, I mean physical keyboard like we have it here. It's going to be some kind of, you know, there'll be some kind of input device, but I don't know what that's going to look like. But I don't think it's going to look like this keyboard. I mean, I think we're talking, my kids are 3 and 5. We're talking 10 years out. Yeah. I mean, when we look at what happened in the last 10 years and where we're going with voice activation and everything and contextual information, I just don't see how that.
Well, they dictate those papers. How are they going to write those papers?
I dictate.
I mean, 10-page paper. How are you going to write that? Not with a glass keyboard. You're going to either dictate it.
Right.
I'm just saying the keyboard at this point is 135 years old, I think, and it's survived through transitions of all kinds of things to hook it up to. I think that we're 10 years is a very, very long time in technology terms. It would be I still think it would be a really impressive feat if not only someone came up with something that was as useful and multi-purpose as a keyboard, because remember, it's not just for putting text in very, very fast, but also moving around an app very, very fast. We'd also need a sort of a cultural twist where I am going to want to, I've got 8 hours worth of work to do, and I want to sit here speaking into a microphone for 8 hours. I don't even like speaking into this microphone for 90 minutes.
And I admit that most people know who've emailed me know that my emails are very short. You know, they're very, very short. That's because I'm not typing them. If they're really long, if you get a long email from me, it means that I dictated it, because I have damage that was done to my hands from my work in the past. And so I can't, you know, if I type, you know, a 2-page paper, I can't move my hands for days. So if you get something long from me, it means that it's dictated. And so I'm very, like, I just deal with this all the time. And, you know, there is a lot of stuff that's still kind of rough when you deal with Dragon software, for instance, where you're going, you know, change that or backspace or remove that or, you know, and there's a lot of things you move around and do it, but it's still, even with that, and I do edit it with the keyboard. I just find myself, you know, especially even text now, if I'm not sitting in a public place, it is so much faster for me to just hit, you know, speak it, and then I speak the text, and then I hit go, and it's just faster and easier than, you know, typing it all out.
I'm the same way.
So 10 years is a long time. You're right. Who knows what it'll be? Who knows it'll be in 10 years?
Direct brain input.
I would like that.
But you have to think in Russian.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, your picks and tips of the day. I got a pick for you right now. Look at this. GoToMeeting. They're giving away a webcam. I'm going to tell you about that in just a second. But first, let me tell you about GoToMeeting, the best way to hold meetings with colleagues and clients who are not in the same room with you. In fact, it happens all the time. Work is on the go these days. Alex is in Australia. Renee is in Montreal. This is pretty much business as usual. And while you can't get rid of meetings, the best way to meet is to meet online. And frankly, maybe better than meeting face-to-face, because with the screen sharing, you're seeing the same page. You're literally on the same page. And now with the HD Faces video conferencing and GoToMeeting, you're seeing people in crystal clear, high-def video. With GoToMeeting from Citrix, your team is just a click away. I know teams that actually keep GoToMeeting running all day long because they collaborate all day long. You can do that because GoToMeeting is flat rate. You pay one low flat monthly rate for as many meetings as you want, as long as you want. You can launch or join a meeting from anywhere using your computer, your smartphone, your tablet. You can even present from your iPad. That is awfully slick. I want you to try GoToMeeting free. See that orange GoToMeeting, try it free button there at GoToMeeting.com? Click that. Use our offer code MacBreak. 30 days free with GoToMeeting. And I'd like to give you a webcam just to kind of emphasize the fact that GoToMeeting with HD faces really helps with the face-to-face in a meeting. This is the GoToMeeting webcam. These are nice webcams. It's inside here. You can see it. It's a Logitech. Very nice. Here's the deal. We want you to tweet us. This is what we do always with these GoToMeeting giveaways. If you could have a meeting with anyone famous, living or not, using GoToMeeting with HD faces, who would you like to see with HD faces and why? We do ask that you use two hashtags. It's going to mean you have to be fairly succinct in your answer because we're going to search via hashtag and randomly pick a winner from those entries on Twitter. Hashtag MacBreakWebcam and hashtag GoToMeeting. Can you put that on the screen, Chad, so people can see it? Do you have an extra, a little, take a line and do that? Hashtag MacBreakWebcam, hashtag GoToMeeting. Who would you like to meet with from any time in history, living or not, and why? Contest ends June 13th, so you have 2 weeks, Thursday, June 13th, at 11:59 p.m., and then we'll announce the winner on the following Tuesday, June 18th. So that's 11:59 p.m. Pacific time. All the details available, contest rules and regulations at inside.twit.tv. Contest is only open to U.S. residents. I'm sorry, that's just the way it has to be because of lawyers. but do try GoToMeeting free today. That's available to anybody. GoToMeeting.com, use the offer code MacBreak. And again, if you want to tweet to us, who would you like to meet using GoToMeeting? Anyone famous, living or not? Who and why? Hashtag MacBreakWebcam, hashtag GoToMeeting. Make sure you get those hashtags in there because otherwise we won't be able to find your entry.
And you, Leo, do you want to know how we use GoToMeeting?
Yeah, how do you use it?
We use it every day.
That's how you use it.
Well, no, we use GoToMeetings as actually the backbone for our comm system. So we have, you know, we do a lot of events where people are in many countries at one time. And sometimes we have teams that are at every location. So literally there's a person there with a camera and gear and everything else. And to keep a back channel so that we can all talk together and we can have our producers be able to just call in and be on the same channel, we actually use the GoToMeeting. And one of the big reasons is because we have IP. So we'll have a sound devices, you know, device or whatever, and we'll actually take that XLR out and route it back into these big comm systems that we have that tie everybody back into the room. So if you ever see those shows where everyone's got a little headset, so the backbone that we use to actually connect all those people, when it's really complex, we use another really expensive piece of software that's like thousands of dollars. But when we're doing simple events, which is 90% of them, we actually use GoToMeeting to tie all those locations together for, you know, international productions and national productions. And so, and it's great. That's all I got to say. So it pays for itself every month. And we have because we tie so many locations together, we actually have another version of it that's more, you know, more robust. But it is GoToMeeting from Citrix. And
that's pretty good. I'm impressed because I know you use Google Hangouts a lot too, but I'm
impressed. Well, we use the Hangouts a lot. I mean, that's what we're actually doing. Most of the time what we're doing is a Google Hangout, but what we need is another
something else. You need the screen sharing too.
So right. while we're doing the Google Hangout, this is literally just for the audio so that while we're doing the Google Hangout, for instance, we've got all of the producers working everywhere on just a video on an audio backbone that's easy to, you know, interface and nice and clean and very, you know, low bandwidth and everything else. It's not the actual event. We don't actually use GoToMeeting for the actual, like, the way most people would think of it. We just use it as this kind of geeky back end.
That's cool.
That ties in all of our pro comm systems, you know, these clear comm systems but we just have these little interfaces that tie it back into the comms, it ties people from all over the world together for productions. Anyway, I just thought that people might find that equally interesting.
GoToMeeting.com. Use the offer code MacBreak. And then we'll put the Twitter tags up for you later so you can get them because they're complicated. I want you to get them right. That way you can be in the drawing for the webcam. Let us get your picks of the week, starting with you, Andy Anatko.
My pick is kind of something simple. I've got it on the screen behind me. Google Trends is the Google product that will show you here's what people are searching for on Google, the topics that they're looking at. So they recently updated a few days ago, and one of the features they added was this really cool, like, full screen, like, web app sort of mode. I'm always looking for kind of cool things to have a screen doing when I need the computer to be on, but I'm not actually using it right now. And so it's kind of cool to, like, be seeing here's what people are searching for, like, on Google, the entire world. Liberace was a big trending topic.
Did you watch that last night? That was a terrible movie, boy. Sunday night.
I didn't think it was terrible. I thought it was really cool seeing Michael Douglas doing a role that you don't really typically see him in.
I don't know.
It was interesting. It was a lot. Also, Rob Lowe with like his
Rob Lowe was awesome in it.
Stretched like absolutely. Yeah.
Taut. That was good.
That was scary. I thought it was fun.
Bill Murray was good in it. It was just a boring story. Bill Murray was Seymour, the lawyer.
No. That was Dan Aykroyd.
I mean, did I say Bill Murray? Dan Aykroyd. Thank you.
Dan Aykroyd. Right.
Yeah.
Paul Reiser also a lot.
Paul Reiser was in it. Yeah.
A lot of nice little cameos. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I expected to like it. I expected to like it because it was going to be just like 90 minutes of camp, 2 hours of camp, but it was actually a very, 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 very sweet story.
It's a little weird watching Matt Damon and Michael Douglas make out, but.
That is a very, very beautiful couple.
I can't believe you cheated on Ben Affleck.
I don't think Liberace could have gotten, I don't think Liberace, even like at the peak of his earning power, I don't think he could have rated, a Matt Damon. I don't want to begrudge him for anything, but I'm not gay, but him getting out of the pool saying, "All right, I do understand the appeal."
Nice cheeks.
Of being into guys. Yeah. Yes.
This is Google Trends. Chad's getting us back on topic. Google.com/trends, and there's a checkbox where you can see the full
You can select the region of the world, including the entire world, and you can choose to have just one big tile or the whole big Brady Bunch sort of.
You're doing the global one, I can tell, Chad, because I'm seeing all sorts of interesting international
kinds
stuff.
Of weird moon man languages. Yeah.
You have Australia, Canada, Hong Kong, India, Israel, Russia. That's cool. Really neat. United States, UK. All regions. You must be doing all regions.
PG friendly.
I just switched to Canada, see what they're talking about. Currently.
Ottawa Race Weekend. Skagit River Bridge. Halifax Mooseheads. Yep, that's got to be the Canadian one.
Yep.
Let's go to Montreal, speaking of that. And Rene Ritchie, your pick of the week.
Now, I was certain that I picked this before, but I searched and I couldn't find it. So I apologize if it's a repeat, but it's especially valuable this time of year. And it's an app called Glassboard, and it's by Brent Simmons, who did NetNewsWire.
Love it.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. It's iOS, it's Android, and it's the web. And it creates sort of private rooms. And there's a free tier. There's also a paid tier. I pay for it so I can have unlimited rooms. But it's incredibly useful at conferences. I'm getting a room ready for WWDC, so we're going to have several people from iMore there, and we can keep track of what everyone's doing. We're going to have people at E3, and I can have a room for that.
Can I ask you, though, now that Google Hangouts is out, doesn't Hangouts kind of do the same thing, the text-based?
It does, but there's going to be times when I'm busy enough, and I'm going to want to silence Google Hangouts, and so few people are going to be, or so specific people will be in Glassboard that I can leave that on when I turn off Twitter and I turn off Google+, especially when I'm roaming or when I'm live blogging or doing something else.
Right.
So it just becomes an urgency filter for me. And the other nice thing is the way it's built. We're starting to use it to do beta testing for the third version of the iMore app because people can ask for features. They can log problems. They can add images. They can annotate things. And it goes to a very specific group of testers. And you can just leave it open doing those things where Google Hangouts, I'm going to do a bunch of other stuff with. So I'm a huge fan of it. Brent does amazing software, and it's been very useful so far.
Yeah, I love it. I just wonder how much... I have a feeling he kind of ran into a buzzsaw with Google Hangouts, as did
maybe
WhatsApp and every other, kind of text-based group.
But the other thing is that a lot of people don't want to use a Google product for something that could be very private back-channel communications. So that's I like that product because there's a way that it's private. They're not going to sell ads. They have no interest in who you're talking to and what times and when.
The icon has a lock on it, so you know that is private, and you have very granular control over who gets access to what.
It's encrypted, so that's good, yeah.
Yeah.
It is encrypted or not?
I believe it is. I think last time I checked it, it was.
Share privately. No privacy settings because everything is private.
And it's private by default, which is nice because I've made mistakes on Google Hangouts. And ironically, Google Hangouts is so much easier to use on mobile, and now it's much more complicated on the web, and this just keeps it all in one simple place.
I do want to see the word encrypted, which I don't see.
I'll check with him.
Yes, Brent. Of course, it's got to be encrypted. I mean, that's the big story with Skype is that apparently what we thought were encrypted chats are not on Skype. So that would be an opportunity for a company like Glassboard, provided they were encrypting.
Also, they tend to be very responsive to the particular needs of their users, where Google Hangout is going to have to apply to such a large crowd. They're going to make a bunch of concessions for that, and Glassboard has an incredibly small focus, so they can be very specific to that.
I'm just looking. I think it is encrypted. It sure does imply that it's encrypted.
I'll double check, but I believe I asked before.
I'm looking at the privacy statement. It does seem like...
I mean, they don't just let you put a lock on an icon. Come on.
Encrypted Glassboard data is decrypted only on our production servers. So it's encrypted, but they have access.
Yeah, I'll follow up on that just to make sure.
No, it's I mean that's the story. It's using encryption. There are certificates, but CPL Labs employees, some, a restricted number, have access to the certificates, and they're strictly prohibited from using that access except in the case of catastrophic system failure or in compliance with law enforcement. So just so you know, you should know, that's what it means. Now, unfortunately, that's the stat. I mean, this Google Hangouts is the same, but that's the status nowadays with everything. And I think it's unfortunate. And as Skype, of course, has never implied that it's any different either. Glassboard, Brett Simmons, it's available Android, iOS, and, of course, on the web. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Alex Lindsay's pick of the week.
So I don't think that I've talked about this in the past, but a lot of people ask about what I put on my laptop. So we have a lot of laptops. And we drop them, bang them, smash them. And one thing that there's two different cases that we use, that I use for my laptops. The ones that I put most of my computers on are these spec cases. Have you seen
these? Love those, and I use them, I love them too.
And it really does make a difference. These unibody Macs are fragile, in my opinion. I mean, compared to how we use them anyway.
And the aluminum dings. I don't know if they're fragile in terms of like they would smash.
No, they don't smash, but you get lots of dings, and you can very quickly. I've had this one go off the table, and it would have left one of those nasty dents.
They're ugly,
in the lower corner or something where it hit. And instead, it's protected by this, and just a lot less scratch. Especially if you think you're ever going to send this to, Gazelle or something like that. It's like at this point, I buy these when I'm buying my Mac. You know, like I want it to be pristine when it goes in. Now, another one that I've really gotten kind of into is this in-case. So the cool thing about this in-case is the texture.
Look at that. It looks like a crocodile.
So this is my little Air that I use in economy. And and it's just, I really like the pocked area. I don't know. It sticks out and I can grab it and, it's, I don't know. I like it. You can't put stickers on it like you can with the other one, but... but it's really cool, and this is made by InCase.
Well, those are pretty. They have some pretty designs too.
Yeah, so I think those are two. But I highly suggest I've gotten to the point where we use them so much, and they protected our computers so much from things. When you see a bare computer, you just want to grab onto somebody and say, "Stop the insanity! Get a case!"
And the other thing is that like I was not a fan of these cases until like after airport security got a little bit more tight. And the first time I had to like think twice before figuring out which of these tubs that has an identical aluminum back. That was when they had the tie books, and that when they made that change, that's when I started putting stickers on them. But it's the same thing. I always put
You get these cases and then you throw stickers all over it. Like the one that I'm talking on right now has stickers all, a couple stickers on the back. And so it's very clear that it's my case, and which is important for us too. So it's great. You're not feeling like you're going to have to get rid of all that gum later off of your off the back of your computer. Okay. So anyway, that's it.
Very nice, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes this edition of Mac Break Weekly. I want to thank Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps for joining us as always. This time in the very early hours of the morning from Australia. We're in Australia, Sydney.
I'm in Sydney. Yeah, I'm right off of Darling Harbour. It's gorgeous.
So beautiful. Isn't that a beautiful city?
It is really. And I mean, I walk everywhere and people are like, you can get a cab. And I'm like,
such a gorgeous.
I'm going to walk. Sydney is stunning.
We were there in the spring, though. You're in there in the fall.
It's like it's still 70 degrees out.
It's still pleasant. It's
very pleasant. It's a little chilly in the evening. It's been raining a little bit here and there, but overall, I mean, it's just such a, especially in this one little area here, is just this unbelievable place to just walk around.
I love Australia. I wish it were closer, but on the other hand, that keeps out the riffraff.
like us.
It's a long way to go.
it's great location.
We're thrilled you could be here. Thank you. And now the sun is up. You can go out and enjoy the day.
Not yet, but it'll be here eventually.
Any day, mate. Yes. From Montreal, where it's always snowing, Mr. Rene Ritchie. No, I bet spring is sprung in Montreal.
It's two extremes. It's either minus 40 Celsius or plus 40 Celsius. Right. You get very few days in between.
When I was in Toronto, Amber MacArthur was always saying, it's patio weather. That meant it was above freezing, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Amber is very smart about that.
Patio weather. Thank you, Renee. Renee is at imore.com. They also do Crackberry and what is the Android?
Android Central and Android Central. WP Central for Windows Phone.
Oh, you do a Windows Phone site?
Yes, sir.
You know, I'm going to have to check it out. I got the Lumia 928, the Verizon version of it. It's actually kind of a nice phone.
I'm getting the 925 as soon as it's available.
Yeah, the 925 is going to be even more beautiful. It's all aluminum.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking, I wish they could put Android on it.
Everyone's making good phones now, Leo.
That's the good news. No matter who your carrier is, there's something great that you have choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is fabulous. Yeah, and that's kind of the bottom line. Mr. Andy Inaco, who will probably never use a Windows phone, but nevertheless, if you do, I'm sure there'll be a lot of attention.
HTC is coming out with rumored one in July that will have Nokia's new PureView image sensor for 40 megapixel sensor that downsamples down to 22. And if it's good, I would like a camera that's better than the iPhone's camera.
Best camera I have is the Lumia. I have to say it is the best camera. I do like the HTC One. That's an interesting choice because it's a 4 megapixel camera. They went the other way.
Better, not more. Better pictures, not more megapixels. Right. That's what everybody.
I'm pretty happy with the images on it.
Does it do good low light?
Much better low light. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some say it doesn't do as well in bright light. I think it does well in bright light. It's just 4 megapixels, so it's not going to be. You're not going to make a poster out of it, right? But no, two micron pixels is an interesting way to go. I'm very curious what Apple's going to do with the iPhone 5S. Yeah. They've got to do something that makes you go, oh. They've made a big step forward, and I just
There'll
don't
be
know
a Phil Schiller that. Camera segment. There's always a Phil Schiller camera segment.
Yeah. It's interesting because I mean I was not planning on taking a walk through the park yesterday, so I didn't have my camera with me, and I just damn it! Not only do I have just a camera phone, I don't have my iPhone with me. It's just the Samsung, and I got home and put these on a big screen. It's like
not bad.
Actually, those are very good pictures.
Not bad.
They're fine by me.
Yeah, a lot of detail. Color's pretty accurate. Not quite as accurate as the iPhone 5, but.
But see, I'm sorry, we're starting a new topic. I'll button this by saying if you spend a small amount of money for aperture, the 30% quality difference between any two cameras can be completely negated because you can fix any color problem, any sharpness problem. If the pixels are there, you can make a great photo out of it.
I agree, yeah. And there you go. There you have it. That's the button. He's the man at the Chicago Sun-Times. Unbutton the button. Go ahead. You can unbutton the button.
Which one? This one?
Thank you for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. I've been doing it wrong all this time. It's now 8 hours, plus 8 hours to get to UTC. 1900 UTC on twit.tv every Tuesday. But if you can't be here on Tuesday mornings or early afternoons or in the middle of the night if you're in Australia, please get the on-demand version. Audio and video always available after the fact at twit.tv/MBW. And we will be doing live coverage, as I mentioned, in 2 weeks, June 10th. Our coverage will begin at 10 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. or 1 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC on Monday, June 10th of the WWDC keynote. So you want to tune in for that. And we will not be live blogging Tim Cook on All Things D tonight. You just have to watch Joanna Stern do it at ABC. I'll be watching, too. I'm not live vlogging for one line about something in a new product, some cagey line. But I will be looking with interest to see what he says, because he will say something tonight. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time. Now, get back to work, because break time is over. Been a nice, long break.